Good morning. Let me take this opportunity to welcome everybody that has been listening. We had invited to this meeting the retail sector and the food processing industry, as well as the trade department for small business development and core holdings who are involved in food production, agriculture. We want to thank everybody that has been in this meeting for coming. We'll then move to the item 2, apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, and good morning, colleagues. I've got an apology of Honorable Nkwankwa, who is our alternate. He is head up in the Finance Committee. And also, I've got an apology of the Deputy Minister, Minister Ingrid Chabete, who's having a meeting with ICTS in the Cabinet. And then I also have an apology for Minister Zulu, who is the Minister for the Small Business Development. She's also held up in the Cabinet meeting. I also have the apology of Mr. Bewa, who has been pushed by the doctor. And then from there, those have been invited, with, we have an apology of SPA, an apology of Pick and Pay, which has an obligation if they are out of the country. We've got an apology of Checkers, apology of Nando's, and the apology of Fruit and Veg, and then also the apology of Tiger Brain. Those were the retail directors who were invited, but they committed in different ways. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Can we then move to item number 3, the adoption of minutes of the meeting held on 18th February. From page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, yes, Honorable Sam.
Thanks, Chair. I just have a small addition I'd like to suggest for the penultimate paragraph, last line, where it says, and reduce demand on households. I'd like to add, through an emphasis on high-pressure stove users, which reduce power demand on mid-to-high-income households. You got that? Page 7. Penultimate paragraph, which currently ends, says to mitigate supply demand and reduce demand on households. I'd like to add the words, through an emphasis on high-pressure solar geysers, which reduce power demand in mid-to-high-income households.
Yes, I agree with that because it was because...
Chair, I also just have a few points of grammar and stuff which they'd like to submit to the Secretary of Committee for him to consider for the overall method. It doesn't have any substantive changes of meaning.
Okay, we'll agree to that, and I'll have to look at the submission. Can we then move for the adoption?
Yeah. So I have one more addition for page 8, please. 1, 2, 3, the fourth bullet point. Fourth line, which currently says local content in relation to cost, right? bullet point for tonight. Local consent in relation to cost. I'd like to add the following clause. The cost comparative imported versus locally made so cheeses. Where it said local content in relation to cost, comma, you've got that. And on the fourth bullet point, fourth line, page 8. After it says in relation to cost, I'd like to add the cost comparison of imported versus locally made solar geysers, which was a point that I made in the committee last week.
Yes, I remember that.
Well, that's everything. Okay.
I would also want to remind the committee secretary that we had resolved that in terms of resolution, we should put them in numbers as opposed to bullets, so that we can then say resolution numbers or so. If that can be done in future and also correct as many as possible. To reflect that. Can I have now move over the adoption? Honorable November.
Thanks, Jefferson. I hereby propose that you adopt some through reflection of the meeting.
Honorable Chan.
Second the clerk. Chair.
Sure. Thank you. The minutes of the meeting of the Portfolio Committee of Small Business and Competitive Development held on the 18th of February 2015 are hereby adopted. Thank you very much. Before we continue, I would then ask that we do the introduction because there are folks here that are meeting for the first time. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and my name is Goldstein.
I'm Constantine Mkash. I'm the choir advisor for the committee.
Thank you, Chair. I am King Gunene, committee secretary for the committee. Thank you.
I'm Shitango Manabasa, a whip of the committee.
Namadema November, member of the committee.
Toby Johnson, I'm the DA Head of Minister for Small Business Development.
Hi, I'm Henry Kruger. I'm also from the DA.
And let me share, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Trey Bashuma. I'm Executive Chairman of Goa Holdings.
Nami, also from Goa, Chief Executive.
Good morning, my name is Brian Aroni. I'm representing Massmart Holdings.
Good morning, my name is Tina Bogata. I'm from Woolworths Stakeholder Engagement.
Good morning, I'm Ivory from Woolworths.
Good morning, I'm Denzim Goladela. I'm Head of Transformation at Woolworths.
My name is Lita Kura. I'm from Woolworths.
My name is Eric Dello. I'm from Woolworths.
Amanda Hingy.
And have you seen PNG?
Anela PNG.
Good morning, Lawson Kumani from the Department of Small Business Development.
Morning, Greeks. My name is Tembai Mabandla. I'm from the Ministry of Small Business Development.
Morning, I'm Jeff Ndumo from the Department of Small Business Development.
Morning, good morning, my name is Justice Malafo from Parliament of Support Office, responsible for media and communication support to the Commission.
Thank you very much. I will start by outlining why we are here. We have called this meeting because we view the retail sector and the food processing industry as very important stakeholders, as well as those that are playing the role of developing agricultural SMMEs and cooperatives. So our focus today is on agricultural SMMEs and cooperatives. The purpose of this meeting is to share a common perspective with the retail sector and food processing industry on the need for opening a sustainable market for agricultural SMMEs and cooperatives. It is also to get an understanding of the role played by the retail sector and food processing industry in development of agricultural SMMEs and cooperatives. We believe that there is lack that is being done there. And since this department is charged with the responsibility of developing SMEs and cooperatives, there has to then be a synergy and coordination of activities. Also, want to get an understanding of hindering factors to the retail sector and food processing industry in their efforts of opening a sustainable market for agricultural SMEs and cooperatives. But remember that we interacted with Pick and Pay last year as one of the retailers. And one of the issues that were raised by Pick and Pay relates to the role that government has to play in as far as development of the supply chain that would lead to the retail sector getting quality products and also the emerging agricultural small businesses being able to meet the demands of the retail sector. We also want to identify the role that needs to be played by the Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development, as well as other government departments, to enhance the effort of the retail sector and the food processing industry in the process of developing SMEs and cooperatives. Again, it reflects to what Pick and Pay presented to us, but Pick and Pay would, an entrepreneur would approach Pick and Pay or the retail sector with a very good product, a very well-researched concept, business concept. But then, what would become a hindering factor would be the access to land if it is, it has to do with agricultural products, or access to adequate infrastructure that would support that initiative. And they pointed a number of entrepreneurs that could not meet the demand, although they have been given an opportunity because of the sometimes the red tape that comes from the government, access to finance that's longer than the time that they agreed on in terms of when they want their product. Meaning that although the retail sector was willing to collaborate with the emerging producers, what then becomes the problem is that those emerging producers not be able to meet the demand of the retail sector. And that then requires intervention. Also to share with and hear the comments of the retail sector and food processing industry on the power holdings agricultural development model that the portfolio committee got exposed to during its oversight visit to Ugu District Municipality in Gwalumunasal. We have invited COA because we came across a very unique technology and the concept, and we would want to hear from the retail sector as whether that in their view is something that they think would add value in the development of the value chain that would lead to a situation where small agricultural SMEs and cooperatives would get into the mainstream economy and willing to participate there. Why we are taking this approach? We think that the need for the government and the private sector to move from a common perspective to attain a common goal of creating more jobs, reducing poverty and inequality. And we think that when we sit together and share views instead of blaming each other from different corners, we can move, because we all have the same. Well, first is the common problem of wanting to reduce poverty, create more jobs. It is in the interest of everybody. It is also in the interest of the business sector to reduce the taxes. And if there are a few people who are working and few businesses that are operating, government will be forced to only increase the taxes. But if there are more people working and there are more businesses operating, then it is a benefit to everybody because the tax will be reduced. But we also feel that we have a very good project that we can reflect on. The 2010 preparation for 2010 Soccer World Cup. We have only 8 years to get ready. Not even eight. The announcement was made in April 2002, and we had to host by 2010. So in actual fact, we had only 6 years to get ready and have everything, because on the 7th year, it was a question of, is South Africa ready? That is what was being done by FIFA. Is South Africa ready? So within 6 years, South Africa was able to focus on 2010 Soccer World Cup, all departments putting their budget in line, aligning their plans to the attainment of the goals of the country to host 2010. That project was led by the Department of Sports and Recreation. At that time, when we were bidding for the 2010, as well as the 2006 Soccer World Cup, which we lost, and the 2010, I was the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Sports and Recreation. So I know that it is possible, because the Department of Sports and Recreation was then at the center of ensuring that that kind of project is achieved. And by putting together all our heads, including the business sector, government departments, and everybody, we were able to prepare the country, and we were able to host the 2010 Soccer World Cup. The MDP called us to do that. 2030 is the target, and the target for 2030 is 11. Million more jobs and reduce poverty. So it is possible that if we put our heads together and work like we did for 2010, or to prepare the country to host the 2010 World Cup, it is possible that we can all work together and achieve what we were able to achieve. So therefore, then we need to identify different roles that need to be played by different role players and stakeholders to develop agricultural SMEs and cooperatives, so as to be able to assess progress, impact, and performance of each role player and stakeholder. For us as a portfolio committee on small business and cooperative development, to be able to assess the impact and the progress that we are making, this department is maintained, we also need to understand right from the onset what role will be played by the retail sector, what role will be played by the food processing sector, what role will be played by other government departments for us to achieve this goal, and what role will be played by the Department of Small Business, and what milestones shall we see, what role will be played by the training sector. what role will be played by the traditional leaders in terms of unlocking the land and then making the land accessible? All those things we need to know from the onset so that we are then able to identify the culprit. If certain milestones are not met, we should then be able to identify the culprit. We should not be coming into a meeting and then say, well, this milestone was not met, but we don't know who was supposed to have met the milestone. So that is the approach that the Povelo Committee is taking, so that we are then able to be systematic and use tools of measurement that are easy to see and identify. We also want to ensure that government policies designed to enhance development of SMEs and cooperatives are adhered to. We are here as public representatives, and we make policies that are aimed at enhancing the development of cooperatives and SMEs. It then becomes our responsibility again to ensure that those policies are adhered to, and especially before they are adhered to, do we all understand them, and do we all understand what they are meant to achieve, so that by the time we move towards the implementation that is taking us to the implementation of those policies, we are all at the same level. We also want to ensure that the established business, SMEs and cooperatives are able to complement each other. I often make an example of a toilet paper and say to myself, if NAMPEC was not, if NAMPEC was collaborating with small cooperatives that are producing toilet papers in different corners and agree that for those small cooperatives and SMEs that are producing toilet papers, they will not bother to get the raw materials because they will sit down and discuss on how they are going to share the market instead of one big company having a lion's share in the market. Would it not be a better way of collaboration to have some form of agreement to say it's difficult to produce the raw material and to access it? For you to supply a school or three schools next to you, if you are a cooperative of five unemployed women that are sitting on a social grant register, but at NAMPEC we can supply you with the raw material and not compete with you to supply that food. I'm sure we would address a number of problems, including what we had when we were on our oversight visit. Local father shops complaining that one of the reasons for them to lose business is that the big wholesalers are actually the ones that are having the starter shops, and some of the people that are seen to be owners of the starter shops are actually workers for big wholesalers. We still have to verify that because they're not engaged with the wholesalers, but that is an allegation that we came across, which could be addressed if the big business and the small business, as well as cooperatives, were able to collaborate and complement each other. We also think that a good approach would reduce the government red tape, because we will be able to sit like we are going to be sitting today, identify those red tapes, and then we have the department, which has got the mandate of engaging with sister departments in order to deal with such a problem. We also would want to ensure that other developed areas receive a special attention. Yes, it is good to have businesses in developed areas, but if we were to reflect and say, how does South Africa look in 1652. Maybe here in Cape Town we would not see the Cape Town that we have today. We would see an area that is similar to where I come from, Harding. Small little shops, poor road infrastructure, but the big cities develop and mushroom because of the commitment and the will to invest. So underdeveloped areas can also develop if a special attention is given to them. And also to ensure that there is maximum benefit from limited resources. What do we mean by that? We mean that somewhere there would be a budget, I think, for training. And we find that a training institute, because it doesn't know about the initiative of a company like COA that has got a technology on agriculture. And then the training institute has got the budget to train people with the hope that those people will get jobs. But because there is no relationship between the two, the kind of skills that are being produced through the training are not speaking to the opportunities that exist. And also because the training institute doesn't know the demand of products that the retail sector would want to buy. Then the training that is provided does not then assist in developing the value chain that will result with the training offers producing the kind of things that are needed in order to produce the kind of products that are required by the retail sector. And because of that, the retail sector is then forced to import because there is no alignment of activities. Whereas if there was a situation where people were able to sit down and train together, you find that the training speaks to the requirements of the retail sector while addressing issues of stress and unemployment. And at the end of the day, it becomes a win-win solution. Then there are issues that were raised by in various meetings that we had last year with a number of stakeholders. Last year we interacted with the representative bodies of SMEs and cooperatives, the associations that they belong to. We interacted with the organized business, we interacted with a number of stakeholders. And the reason for that was to understand the state of SMEs and cooperatives in South Africa. And during those interactions, this is what came across. In terms of SMEs and cooperatives, they raised that there is a lack of access to markets. This is why today was invited to markets. They also said that there is a lack of access to adequate finance, which is why we have the department here. And we are also fighting that FIFA be relocated to fall under the department of our small business and cooperative development, if then FIFA has to provide finance so that we move from the same wavelength. The lack of IT infrastructure to operate from. An issue of adequate infrastructure, and we also came across that when we did our oversight visit. We went to an industrial park which was established way back in the 80s. It still does not have an access road. But it is a township in Soweto. And if people have to come to that industrial park, which does a number of things, produces full uniforms, panel fitting, all sorts of things, they first have to go to town and then take a connecting transport that will bring them to the industrial park. That's a small piece of the road distance would be less than 4 kilometers, make the underground parking accessible. But also, some of the places that we visited were not well designed for the type of business that the people are involved in. We visited the Hunger No More, a packaging cooperative. We can talk a lot about that. We also visited shops. A center that was established by one of the champions for people with disabilities. And what we came across was heartbreaking. The houses they live in, yet the products that they produce is of high quality. The lack of infrastructure to support the business, such as we find that there is a business that is doing well, but because of the road infrastructure, gravel road, that will not be accessible in all weather conditions. Water shortages, electricity and telecommunication services. What are also results that there is inadequate training and skills development that does not necessarily result to job creation and competency. The issue of non-payment of resources in educational space, cost of doing business. They were saying that there is too high, meaning that the electricity and transport and rent. The cost and lack of expenses, the disintegrated support services that are provided by government, the coordinated effort aimed at the development of sustainable cooperatives, and those that are in the rural areas are saying they are neglected. Yes, we have the highest rate of unemployment and poverty. We think that on the side of policies, there are a number of supportive policies. It's very sad that the government established the Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development. It's something that was well received by South Africans with a very, very high expectation. Also, the mandate given to this department, the mandate of coordination and transversal agreement with other departments and also other spheres of government, and ensuring that development of SMEs and cooperatives is prioritized, is also a step in the right direction. We also think that the National Development Plan has made it clear on what are the challenges that we all need to be working towards eradicating, which is poverty, unemployment, and inequality. We also think that there is a movement that has helped through neglect. There are many accords that have been signed, but in particular, the accord on enterprise development and job creation, which business sector, labor, community constituents, and government all agree that is needed. The establishment also of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform and policies that relate to that are something that we can look at. The 70% local procurement policy, the 10% SMEs and cooperatives procurement policy announced by the late president in SONA this year, the 30 days payment on invoices. Putting agriculture as one of the 9 priority points outlined by the state president in SONA, and also the SMEs and cooperative development as one of the 9 points outlined by the state president in SONA again. All those things are instruments and policies that we can then take advantage of and then agree on how we are going to be speaking to this, because they are the What is it that you are expecting from this meeting? We are expecting to understand how the Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development will work with retail sector and food processing industry to develop SMEs and cooperatives. When the retail sector has shared that information, we as a portfolio committee would get an understanding of how this department can work with the retail sector in this processing. That is what is going to happen here. That would then enable us to question this department if nothing is achieved when we have had the retail industry here present with us and saying this is what can be done. These are the efforts that we have. These are the transformation program that we have within the retail sector. We would then, as a portfolio committee, be able to name the department and say, on the 25th of February 2015, we held a meeting and the retail sector shared this information with us. Why is there no movement in that? We are also expecting that we will have an understanding of the market access target offered by the retail sector and food processing industry and the type of crops and the size of the market. You see, there is what is called cloud in South Africa. And whenever I am in another country, when I see a product that I know comes from South Africa, I get excited. It's like when I am here in Cape Town and I see a car with the number plate empty, I get excited. It happens naturally because of how you love, how you relate to that place. Now, it can be correct that when we go into shops to buy, we don't prioritize products that are proudly South African. And when the retail sector also is buying, it will not prioritize to buy products that come from South African goods. When they do that, they are actually providing jobs to South Africans. But sometimes I go to shops and I find small things like a placemat. Placemat. Made in Indonesia. Made in China. Made in India. And I then begin to wonder, is the retail sector patriotic? Do we understand special in? Do we prioritize product making over and above crime reduction and job creation in our country? Sometimes I go to the retail that are not to buy, just to look at products. I go to Mr. Price, go to Woolworths, I go to Macro, and I look at the products that are there. And I ask myself, if it is a woven basket, I know that blind people are very good in moving because I work with them before I became a member of parliament. I was working with in an organization that was promoting self-help income generation projects. But then, the process that we find in these shops are not produced in South Africa. And then how do we relate that to the 70% local procurement, to the 30% procurement from SMMEs and cooperatives, but also to job creation and poverty reduction. So I would be very much interested to know from the retail sector and food processing industry the type of crops and the size of the market. If you buy tomatoes, how much do you spend on that? How much do you spend on agriculture? And what is it that you think should be the share of South Africans? Those people that are unemployed in rural areas, such as access to land. And I think that we need to agree in this discussion during this meeting on how we are going to respond to the issue of the fact that there are 27 poverty notes. There were 22 in 2001. But today, I interacted with the Department of Agriculture. I also listened to the President when he was speaking during SONA, that there are 27. And we want to hear what are the plans and how does the retail sector think that it could be of help in the development of those 27 poverty nodes in line with the NDP goal. We also expect that in this meeting we would agree on the support services offered by the private sector to develop agricultural SMEs and cooperatives, and also agree on how the department then thinks it can enhance those support services, as well as in the area of skills transfer and skills development programs, and how those would be coordinated and implemented. We know that the private sector has got corporate social responsibility, how those could be coordinated and channeled in a way that it develops SMEs and cooperatives to actually create a balance between the supply and demand. As well as how the Department of Small Business would assist the private sector to implement its obligation on enterprise development and job creation. And what will also be important for us as members of the portfolio committee would be to keep on reflecting on the strategic plan of the Department of Small Business and how that strategic plan will address identified areas that need government intervention. The long-term expected end result is that it's a trend that 80% of jobs in any country come from SMEs and cooperatives. It will not be different with this country. Therefore, if 80% of 11 million more jobs by 2030 are expected from SMEs and cooperatives, that translates to 8,800,000 jobs from SMEs and cooperatives by 2030. When you divide that by 15 years, you realize that what is expected to, the jobs that are expected to be created through SMEs and cooperatives per year are 586,637. That is the target. Which then means if the department is saying that we will establish and support 100 cooperatives, they must begin to tell us how many of and what informed that 100 cooperatives? Because the target in terms of jobs per year is 556,667 jobs per year. For us to reach the target, that 11 million jobs, and 80% of that expected from SMMEs and cooperatives. There's no other way that we can arrive at how many cooperatives will be assisted, how much money will be needed, how many training centers need to be established, how much the retail sector has to buy. That is what has to drive all of us today. If the target is this, how are we then going to upscale the supply and also ensure that the supply that is being upscaled is equal to the demand of the retail sector and food processing? The long-term expected end result also is a radically transformed economy with previously excluded communities participating in mainstream economy. That is what we are working towards. We are also working towards a reduced number of poor families who depend on government social grants for survival. We are also working towards food security and self-sufficient families that are able to pay for municipal services. If we all work towards this goal, it is possible that the tax can be reduced. Every moment, because there are few people that can afford to pay for services, they pay yearly, and others are receiving free services because they are sitting in the indigent register. And if we were to work towards development of those people and enable people to set up home industries, cooperatives, then families that are sitting on the indigent register would become self-sufficient and self-reliant, and they afford to pay for services, resulting with a municipality that doesn't increase the rate that they are paying for and you are paying for. That would also cost me the revenue base of a municipality and then enable the municipality to provide services in a long-term basis. And lastly, it will be the realization of a development like this. That is what we are working towards. So, I think that before we start the meeting, we all need to understand why we have called this meeting and what it is that we are working towards in terms of short-term and long-term objectives. Having said that, I would then go back to the program and request Mass Mass to make a presentation. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, honourable members of the committee and colleagues, good morning and thank you very much for inviting MapSmart to present to the Portfolio Committee. Let me say at the beginning, I've come here to present what we are doing, but I've also come to listen very carefully, and Madam Chair, there are some things you've said in the last while that have been embarrassing to me as a retailer, and I'll take those comments back to our executives so that we can start making a more considered contribution in areas such as placemats, which could quite clearly be procured locally, for example. MapSmart has prioritized manufacturing development from a small business development perspective, but I will cover what we are doing in the agricultural area because we are quite active there. Perhaps to answer some of the questions that Madam Chair you raised in terms of market size up front, the fresh markets are the fresh retail market, which would include butchery, bakery, and fresh produce, is worth approximately 77 billion rand per annum by our estimate. Our share of that market is 1.2%. We're tiny, mostly because we're new into the fresh produce market. But I'm sure when our retail competitors choose to stop enforcing these exclusivity agreements, we might be able to grow that market share. The size of the dry grocery and our edible foods grocery market is 93 billion rand. I don't have a particular market share at the moment, but MapSmart is our fifth in terms of our market share against the other retail competitors. Let me start by talking about our prior development, our program, and how we look at developing small business. One of our earliest learnings was that corporate buyers, buyers in big corporates, are really not good dealing with our small producers and manufacturers. They're used to dealing with bigger corporates, there are procedures that tend to be a lot more business friendly in terms of other big corporates. So the first thing we chose to do was to set up a small business incubator within MassSmart. So that's a organization of around 9 professionals. It comprises 2 buyers who we've trained in our procurement for small business, and then the remainder of that team are small business development specialists that we've hired. The key objective of the team is to identify and facilitate small and medium local supplier access to opportunities within our supply chain. And I think it's fair to say that something that big corporates have not always been good at, which is understanding what access opportunities exist, and then working proactively to make those opportunities available to smaller businesses. So we prioritize that, and we fully recognize and accept that it's been problematic. Because retail is customer demand driven, one of the things that we really need to do is to help people understand what the demand is that we have in our business. So there's a misconception that we determine 100% what it is that we put into our stores. In terms of fact, what we do is we look at what customers are purchasing, and based on purchasing behavior and patterns of demand, we then put merchandise into our stores. And so, for example, if demand is for LG, Samsung, and Sony television sets, you will find that those be the television sets that you would see most often inside our stores. The trick is that we've got to make that information more accessible to our small business. And I'll give you a good example. There's really high demand for bricks in our business at the moment, and there's insufficient supply. Now, it's not that difficult to set small businesses up in the supply of clay and cement bricks. And so more recently, we've developed a bricks cluster of 5 brick suppliers that we've invested in to supply bricks into our builder's warehouse chains. So there's a real role that business can play in terms of sitting down with small business that have the capability to supply to us and describe to them 2 things. The one is where we find gaps in supply in our own supply chain. And please understand, we might have a gap in supply in our supply chain, which might not be a gap that's been experienced by one of our competitors for a wide variety of reasons. So we look at our own supply chain, and bricks is an example that I've just given. We identify gaps in supply, and then we sit down with potential small business to show them how they can help us to fill that gap. The second issue is obviously to look at import replacement opportunities. A lot has changed since many retailers globally started offshoring production probably as far back as 15 years ago. A lot of the types of things that have changed were salaries in our markets, such as the Chinese market, increased as those countries have developed, and also as global retailers have put them under more pressure to improve our standards and conditions of employment. Exchange rates have deteriorated, certain import barriers have been implemented, and the cost of logistics has increased. So there is a compelling rationale in many instances to be able to look for products that was previously produced locally and understand if there are opportunities to revive local production in those areas as the import market has changed and shifted. So the small supply development team that we have in place is focused on understanding mostly those 2 issues. Gaps in our supply and also import replacement opportunities. Where the latter sounds easy to do, but it is extremely complicated and difficult, and there's a lot of cost analysis that needs to be done.
but it's a worthwhile opportunity to pursue. In terms of the focus of the Small Supply Development Unit, they focus on small and medium business with our turnover below the 15 million rand threshold, and we give preference to black business and to women-owned business. We understand that small business generally needs assistance, so we're not saying we give exclusivity to black business and women-owned business, but we are committed to transforming the economy, and we think it makes good sense to prioritize those two areas. We focus on local manufacturers and developing local manufacturing. That is our primary focus. Why is that our focus? Well, we're a big general merchandise business. If you think about Game, Macro, and Builders Warehouse, you will understand that a lot of the merchandise in those stores is general merchandise and textiles. We're far smaller our fresh food and retail business, although we do have a significant wholesale food business. So this is the end as things currently stand, and we're really novices on this journey. We've recently started it, but at the moment we're working with 24 small manufacturers. A highlight for us, and our Madam Chair, you spoke about the need to look in rural and outlying areas. That is one of our focuses, and a highlight in the project that we're part of is a project in Stutterheim, where we are working with a small manufacturing facility to produce cooler boxes, which were previously imported. And what we've done in that circumstance is we've used one of our private label brands, a brand owned by Maxmart called Campmaster. I'm sure you all know it, and I'm sure you all have Campmaster tents and other paraphernalia in your homes. Thank you very much for that support. Well, now also our Campmaster cooler boxes are made locally in Stutterheim. It was a modest job creation opportunity in that town. Around 24 jobs were created, but it was significant. Quite interestingly, we discovered that those cooler boxes keep products cooler for longer than competitive cooler boxes are on the market. And so we are able to make a nonsense of the view that local manufacture and local production is not world-class. In that case, it's proven to be world-class. So we're working with 24 manufacturers and 136 smallholder farmers distributed across six provinces, and I'll tell you a little more about that a little later. It's worthwhile looking at some of the areas that we're involved and focused in. So I've spoken about bricks. Another area of our gap in our supply chain is steel doors and window frames. Where interestingly, we have a young black lady who owns a business called Vingo Steel Designs, who's our manufacturing and supply to us our steel window frames and steel doors into our Builders Warehouse stores. She started out in one Builders Warehouse store and is now supplying 17 stores. And that is one of the things that we've learned we need to do in dealing with small business. We need to have the flexibility to be able to supply to one store or perhaps a cluster of three stores that are located close to each other. Which, by the way, is something that retailers are not always good at. Because we're national, we tend to have a natural bias toward national suppliers. And it requires flexibility in our thinking and in our decision-making and our processes to be able to work one store at a time. So Revivo started out in one store and then are in 17 Builders Warehouse stores, and our target would be to convert them into a national supplier to our business over time. We also focus on the manufacture of bathtubs, paint. A lot of our PVA and our plaster primer is manufactured by a company called Karula Paints, owned by a small manufacturer based in Vereeniging. We also started out with one store, and we now have him supplying Builders Warehouse and Builders Express stores nationwide. And then also we have our farming project, which are most interest of this committee today. And our farming highlights are as follows. We have 18 active projects with smallholder and cooperative producers. When we talk about smallholder farmers, we're talking about farmers and holdings of from 1 to 5 hectares in size. And we distributed since inception to those farmers 14.5 million rand in non-recoverable grant assistance. And that was starting in around the middle of 2013. Those projects are distributed across 5 provinces. We're operating in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Gauteng. Madam Chair, you'd be happy to know that one of our milestone projects is in Mpumalanga and in Opokalko, very close to Polokwane. I'll tell you a little more about that project. And then also in Limpopo province. We are working with 136 active farmers. And in some ways that looks a success, but in some ways it's also been a failure for us because we started with around 180 farmers. But we have found that the weaker farmers have fallen off those projects. And this is an area where I think we would benefit from a closer partnership with, for example, agriculture, forestry and fisheries. We tend to focus on the farmers with whom we believe we can do our most work. And we don't have the skill and the facility, and we don't always have the time to work with the struggling farmers. And often it's those farmers who need more assistance and who have a bigger impact on their local communities if they can get things right. But we don't always have the skills which start moving into the area of social development to provide assistance to struggling farmers. In Afrikoko, we have got a group of farmers that we work with. I think, and I stand corrected on this number, but I think we have around 24 farmers participating in that project. And here's what we do with them. We sit down with them and we discuss with them and with our buyers what we consider our fresh produce demand will be, particularly in the area adjacent to Opokalko, but extending into Gauteng. And we talk to them about what we think our demand for fresh produce will be and where, for example, that demand will be. So in a recent meeting, our farmers were very keen on supplying us with peppers, but we felt that there would be better demand in sweet corn. And so we discussed that with them. Many of them haven't grown sweet corn before, so at that point, we involve our agricultural extension services, which includes our soil scientists and farmers and food safety people who work to develop growing plans, to understand labeling requirements and to understand soil conditions and what it is that we need to do to prepare the land that is going to be tilled to ensure that we can meet that demand. A key thing, obviously, though, is getting the produce to market. So our agricultural extension services include our farmers, advisory farms and consultants who work with the smallholders, and their job, amongst other things, is to monitor the crop when it's in the ground and understand where we've got to take it out and when we need to stop packing it. To that end, we then become involved in some of the more classic retail support, and in the case of Afrikoko, we've built a pack house for the farmers, and we've staffed the pack house, and we have trained the management of the pack house, and in fact, we have one of our own managers who's a specialist in logistics who manages the pack house, and his job is to ensure that the product is packed safely, timelessly, and in terms of the necessary food safety regulations so that we then get it into our business. Fortunately, we also own fruit spots. We don't own fruit spot retail outlets, but rather distribution. And that food then goes into the fruit spot distribution center, and then we move it into a rather modest fresh food operation, primarily into game stores. We have two other similar projects that we are running with pack houses that we've built in KwaZulu-Natal. And I'm very pleased, and we were very excited 2 weeks ago to meet with COA. We like the work that they're doing in KwaZulu-Natal, and we've agreed to send a team down to look at the facilities and understand how we might be able to optimize those facilities. We've also spoken to the the Small Business Development Ministry. We've had a series of meetings with them, and we understand that there's a similar opportunity in terms of infrastructure that exists on the South Coast. And we'd be very interested to understand how we might also be able to leverage that opportunity. I'm not promising that we can do anything, but certainly we're very open-minded and are very open to partnerships to build our business.
Can I request that we switch off the phone? The network in here gets disturbed, the signal gets disturbed when the phones are on silent. So it's always a problem with this thing. Thank you. Sorry.
Another area that we've become involved in is butchery. We have a very small and a very modest butchery presence, but we would like to increase that in our stores. And in liaising with our small farmers through our stakeholder engagement program, we realized that there are many small farmers that run herds on our relatively small acreage and they don't have access to formal retail. And particularly, They don't have the ability to prepare beasts for slaughter and then to optimize the money that they, or the revenue that they can generate from that. So I don't know if you know where Takiel is, So we just launched a program in Matakiel. It was launched 2 weeks ago, where we've got together a group of around 24 smallholder beef farmers. They really run very, very modest herds. But when we're able to put their combined inputs into one herd, we've been able to generate a commercial herd of around 340 cattle. And we currently have that herd in a feedlot that is run by a commercial enterprise where we are funding the access to the feedlot. And we will now have that herd on a three-month program, after which it will go to Abattoir, and we will assist to get that meat into our supply chain, but also into the supply chain of our restaurants and our other businesses, because we can't take all the cuts of meat in our own supply chain. I suppose the key thing in that particular opportunity is ensuring food safety. So a very important part of our contribution is ensuring that our food safety personnel are working with those farmers to ensure traceability of our cuts all the way back through to the individual farmers. So part of the service we provide in there is not only in preparing cattle for retail, but also in ensuring that food safety requirements are met. We at MassSmart have developed the view that assisting producers and manufacturers is only 50% of the job. It's very easy, in fact, to hand out our money and grants and loans. The really difficult part is integrating those people into our supply chain. So we do track sales very closely, and they're still very modest, mostly due to the fact that these programs are new. So the programs that I've just spoken to you about, we have only produced our off-take of around 13.2 million rand. Clearly that's not enough. We fully accept that, and we realize that we have to scale these opportunities a lot more to be able to make a more impressionable impact. Related to that, though, and I'd like to talk just briefly about our food processing. Agri-processing, as you will know, is an exceptionally difficult market to crack, mostly because consumers are seduced by the well-known national brands, and to be able to match those brands on marketing spend and brand building is exceptionally difficult. When young children are, for example, sent to our Cambridge stores to be shopping, those stores mostly in townships, they have a shopping list that is very specific. It's specific down to the brand of merchandise that the child must buy, for example, Wisa oatmeal. So because of that, the barriers to entry into agri-processing can be very difficult. That is, though, an opportunity where we can leverage our private label ownership. We have our maize meal private label called Econo. It's by no means a brand leader, but certainly a relatively well-established brand. So a little while ago, we concluded that there was opportunity and that it was right to establish a black business person in the supply of maize meal. After all, the primary consumers of maize meal in South Africa tend to be demographically based. And so we assisted together with ABSA to set up a businessman in a business called the Tower Milling in Ventersburg. And we have recently developed an off-take agreement of 35 million rand with the Tower Milling, where they supply maize meal into Econo brand. It's been a very interesting journey, though, in terms of the additional consulting that we've had to provide to get that our product up to spec. Particularly for the last 2.5 months, we've been battling with a humidity problem in the maize meal. Those of you who are agri processors will know that there's a defined humidity standard that you have to achieve to be able to put maize meal on your shelves. And so for 2.5 months, we've been looking at every aspect of Otago Milling's production to understand where the humidity problem is entering the supply chain. So it was through to having scientists looking at the quality of the raw materials that were provided, through to getting industrial engineers involved into understanding the actual processing within the plant. I'm delighted to say that 3 weeks ago we were able to solve the problem, and it was a problem within the plant itself. And working with Latargo and our industrial engineers, we were able to sort the problem, and they're now back in our stores and supplying to us. I sketch out those examples only to give you a sense of the things that are required to be able to do business with our smallest suppliers. This is not a case of simply signing an order. You've got to be committed to the additional work that goes along with that. So what form does our funding take? There are really 3 things that we look at. Non-recoverable grants. We happen to think that that's an opportunity where we should be partnering closely with organizations like the National Economic Empowerment Fund, CEDA, IDC and the like, because mostly that tends to be funding that we put into our raw materials and infrastructure development. That's not something we're very good at all. We far rather focus on the retail readiness aspects of the supply relationship, marketing, merchandising, food safety, logistics, and the like. We feel considerably more confident at being able to focus on those areas. The second thing that we do is we provide our loan guarantees that enable entrepreneurs and our farmers to secure loans with commercial organizations. And finally, we provide these technical services that I've been talking to you about. And those are the agricultural extension services, the product safety services, packaging services, our quality services, industrial engineering services, and the like. You will be surprised how much we can do with a small supplier by assisting them with packaging. Packaging is a very high proportion of cost of our product. And this is one area poor Walmart are maligned often for their purchase of Massmart, but they're absolute experts when it comes to packaging and rationalizing packaging in a way where you're still able to improve things, or you're still able to ensure the safety and integrity of the product. And we've experienced great successes sitting down with suppliers, helping them understand how to have low-cost packaging through the exchange of knowledge that we've been very fortunate to have been able to gain from Walmart. For the 15 months ending December 2015, and I'm talking about a 15-month period because that's our reporting period to the Competition Commission, we disbursed more than 90 million rand in funding to our small and medium suppliers. Altogether, about 60 million has been disbursed in grants, 11 million in loan guarantees, and the remainder in the services that we offer. clearly as an executive at MassSmart, I would like to see a lot more money going into services, and particularly in terms of assisting our small manufacturers to be more retail-ready so they can be more competitive when they hit our stores. So that's a big opportunity for the many partners that are out there focusing on small businesses. Our provisional budget, in the interest of full disclosure, please note this is provisional, it's yet to be approved, is to spend around 50 million rand in the next 12 months. The amount is a little less, and you might ask why, and it's because we've prioritized the businesses that we've currently worked with, and we really want to get them up on their feet before we overextend ourselves with too many new projects. And that's just our common sense strategic prioritization rather than our being shook and stingy. We anticipate that approximately two-thirds of that spend will go into manufacturing. And again, as I indicated earlier, because we think that that's the area where we can make the biggest contribution.
Yes, Honourable Mr. President, may I ask a question? On the paragraph of 15 months ending 28 December 2015, how can it be patents when December 2015 is not yet with us?
Thanks for pointing that out. That should be 2014. Thank you very much for that. A couple of learning points are from our perspective in terms of supplier developers, and this goes partly to our manufacturing focus. We understand that we can provide suppliers with support in the categories in which we sell. Now, we believe it's in fresh food, but we have a very nascent and emerging supply chain in that area, so we're not as confident, although we give it a fair shot. We have found that suppliers need significant support when it comes to our regulatory and compliance issues. Now, we have a very productive relationship with the SADS and a great partnership with them, and I do acknowledge them for the help and flexibility that they demonstrate in helping us in this area. I'm also not saying it's a quality problem. We've been surprised by the quality of small suppliers. You know, these are businesses run by owner-operators. They're exceptionally focused on quality and are very proud of what they do. The quality is good. Demonstrating that quality through meeting regulatory processes is where we need to provide assistance. Labeling specifications are very specific, and it's about ensuring that specificity is achieved. Packaging safety requirements are very specific. Source and production requirements are very specific. So it's in assisting these suppliers to demonstrate their compliance in those areas so that they can get on our shelves. And then with the big corporates, we have the luxury of being able to say, we list you, you're on our shelves, we'll stuck them high, and then we watch the product fly out of our business. It doesn't look like that for small suppliers. You've got to do a lot of work with them post-listing process, after we've listed them to supply to us. And that works around marketing and brand development work. It's around in-store merchandising. You will often walk into our and our competitors' stores, and you will see demos happening in the stores, and food tasting, and wine tasting, and the like. Small suppliers often don't have that level of, one, sophistication, and two, access to hire demonstrators and to do those types of promotions. So we have to sit down with the small supplier after they listed to assist them to develop those brand building programs in store, and then to sit down with them and feed back to them about why product isn't moving. The big corporates, you know, have market data and market share data, and they always understand exactly what the velocity of sales is through our stores, and they're then able to intervene to be able to take the requisite action where they need to. Small suppliers don't have that level of sophistication. So what we need to do, and what we do is build the marketing intelligence systems that sit down, so that we're able to sit down with them and say, the price point has moved. You know, your price point when you listed was this opening
price level, but that's changed now, and we've got to start working on perhaps making more price competitive. Where there's been innovation in this particular category, and this is what the innovation is, we need now to sit down and understand how we can assist you to develop your either the same level of innovation. And again, we believe that that's a better area for us to be spending our money in with small suppliers because we understand it very well, and it's often not in the interests of other people to provide that level of advice and support, but it is in our interests because we're able to generate our higher sales in our stores. So, as a concluding comment around that and indeed around this brief presentation, we are believers in small supply development. We fully get and understand, Madam Chair, the impact that this has on the tax space. We believe this is good for business, it's good for country, it's good for nation building, and I think that was probably one of the biggest impacts of 2010, and if you can bring the same energy to causing economic development this way to become a nation building rallying cry, that's most welcome. We'd like to see that our commercial and other funders focus mostly on assisting us with our raw materials and infrastructure development with our small suppliers, and we would really like to be able to devote more of our funding and attention to retail readiness and to post-listing support suppliers. That said, and for members of the committee, we prepared a very brief little booklet for this committee that tries to bring to light some of what we've done, which I will give to you. I would bear for the minutes like to point out that because we've done it very quickly, there are some inaccuracies, and I wouldn't want to be accused of misleading Parliament. I'm not doing that, but for example, there's a brick supplier we featured where he said you will see her supplied in our stores, her bricks in our stores. I think they only hit the store within the next 2 days or so, so they're currently in stores. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. We will then proceed to the presentation by COA. And we have a working tea break. Those that is what you think you can stand up and take tea because of time constraints. They do that all the time. You don't mind that, that's why I'm working to get the application document. So when you get the application document, you take out the important things from the document.
Yeah,
Shuma, you said that when you're ready?
You have to take out the important things that you said. Yeah, it is a particular one, but then in your report, you don't put the whole, you don't outline the whole presentation in your report. Your report is comprised of actual important things from the specific document, but then you will state.
Let me ask you to fetch quickly and take your seat so that we don't necessarily have a break.
Okay.
Let me ask that we quickly, as quickly as we can, take our seats. Will you introduce your team again?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rook. as we said earlier, my name is Trevor Chuma. I'm Executive Chairperson of Kowa Holdings, and I'm here with our Chief Executive Officer, sitting behind me, Mrs. Gugu Dlamini. What we'll do, our presentation is in two parts. So just for those who may not have visited our pilot project in Umbumbulu, in Vulamesho Municipality in Ugu District, we will show a very short video of the project, which was profiled on SABC2 some time ago, and then we will do a short PowerPoint presentation. Thank you.
Let me begin with a greenhouse project. The Fat Nano Greenhouse pilot project was started without government money and harvesting began on the 20th of October. Over the next 10 months, 30,000 kilograms of tomatoes will be harvested. The project is being managed by a holding company until a local cooperative has mastered the craft of successfully growing expert-grade greenhouse tomatoes. This cooperative greener farming initiative project, I was inspired by the need to bring employment to the people in rural areas. Most people are moving from rural areas to get jobs in urban areas, resulting in such attempts, vendors coming up everywhere. We wanted to come with the idea of bringing work to people in the rural areas. And we then partnered with Top Greenhouses Israel and Kowa Holdings South Africa to come up with a model, which is the one we have here. We come into the community working together with Kowa Holdings, and Kowa Holdings raise the money for the community to get the greenhouses. Then we come in, we build the greenhouses, where one of our engineers is on the site, and we work with a lot of people who provide the labor for constructing the site. Once the site is up, Kowa come back on the scene and train the people how to grow the vegetables, and nurture them, and stay hand in hand working with this community like that. And it takes the time that they are able to know how to do it themselves. But the project can take anything from 3 to 5 years to actually give a few funds for mentorship for the community. Normally, they are working as a cooperative. So this is the model that we are adopting. This greenhouse there is 1,000 square meters. The total cost to build such a structure is in the region of 350 to 400,000 rands. to get it up to harvest stage. This is including the structure and the wages for the staff. Such a greenhouse is producing between 50 to 60,000 kgs of tomatoes for a year. Currently, they are harvesting 1,500 kgs every week for a month, and will continue to do so for the next 10 months. The planting process involves planting seedlings. The seed of the response planted into the greenhouse, and we are using a mitigation system where we are taking water from a local stream nearby, and then we are mixing it with fertilizer and having what we call drip irrigation. So we are preserving water and not using excessive fertilizer. Between growing and harvesting, it is taking between 60 to 80 days, and then from there we are harvesting for 10 months. Twice a week, every week, every month, for up to 10 months.
What makes this greenhouse quite a journey as opposed to other greenhouse projects that we have seen? Number one is the community involvement. When we started out, the vision was not to simply develop a greenhouse in the middle of the valley. The vision was to really empower people to learn how to construct a greenhouse, learn how to run a greenhouse as successfully, so, and learn what the process is that is involved in getting your produce from your farm into the marketplace. The other important thing or the unique factor is the partnership. You know, the relationship between the community at large, the relationship between cooperatives that are the stakeholders and the custodians of this project, the relationship between the inquiry as the local government, and then also the relationship between your business enterprises such as cooperatives and top greenhouses.
Yeah. So the solution of the ability is to increase market selling, the land and pumping. We have seen the land and not only the land. So the solution of the land is to increase the land and the supermarket and the value of the land and the supermarket. So it's not going to be the land and the land and the land and the land.
My name is Tanisha
Afrikaans.
I am the
farm manager
down from the top of the north. I have studied horticulture. I've waited for 5 years looking for a job, and last year I received a call from Durban after that 5 years to work in the greenhouse as an agronomist. Of course, that has changed a lot in my life. I am growing in the greenhouse and I get a lot of things. Financially, working in the greenhouse is helping me a lot. I have managed to have my own place to stay and depending on myself. Instead of my parents, I am helping my siblings as well in terms of their registration at school, helping my mother who is the only one who is getting a breadwinner for the children. Extra knowledge I am getting from the chief agronomist of Israel has improved my knowledge and the skills to manage this kind of setup.
My name is Bonziwe Ntuli. I live at the Sofe. When I got the job at Greenhouse, I was in work. I stayed in my home for 5 years, and this job at Greenhouse helped me to pay the school of my baby, to make the salary for my home, to help the people stay with me in my home. I stay with my sister and my sister's baby and my brother's baby. And I get this money, and I'm happy to get this money because I'm taking it for a long time.
Thanks.
My responsibility is on every day activity of servicing that needs to be the trainer. I am putting cooperative members about how to train the plant. And I am the provided by co-holding. He is my supervisor. So I have to start with every aspect of that is challenging the trainer. We want to see the project expand out for 10 million across to other provinces and even other countries. And we know how to collaborate together with the communities, the traditional leaders, the government, and the other private partners. And we are able to provide the technical know-how to make sure that the project can grow beyond the level of production and create more jobs.
Thank you. Now we will go into our short PowerPoint presentation. I'm now going to hand over to our CEO, Gugu Dlamini, to present our PowerPoint.
Thank you very much. Good morning to the members of the committee, and thank you for the opportunity that you have given us to do this presentation. I believe that a lot has already been said in the video in terms of the work that we do. Essentially, in one sentence, as COA, we have put together a complete solution from the sourcing of the product to the end where the goods are actually sold in the retail space. And we are doing that working hand-in-hand with localized people or SMEs and cooperatives on the ground. And we have packaged a turnkey solution for them so that they don't have to worry about anything other than simply running the greenhouse if they are driving their particular strategy or if they also have an open field farm that they also have access to. We use that as well. So that's really our role. Our role is really to take away the headache for the retailers for everything that needs to be done before the product actually arrives at the door of the retailer. So that's what we specialize in. So our view is that we are living in a country that is in dire need of really driving rural development, which is why our focus as a company is in the rural areas with the view of, on one hand, meeting food security, but more importantly, of bringing in our communities into the economic component of the agricultural sector. So really, as our chairman has already said in the clip, we have the vision of ensuring that we grow not just in the KZN region, but also to expand across the globe, providing the solution that we are talking about. Our strategic intent as an organization is really to do a number of things that we believe our country needs to get past. While the policies of government are great and while the opportunities that the retail sector presents, at the end of the day, somebody has to really go down and make things happen. So we believe that our model meets a number of objectives for the nation. The first one is really unlocking broad-based rural empowerment and development because, as has already been said, we are working predominantly in the agricultural sector and predominantly in rural contexts. Secondly, we believe that creating the jobs, as the chairperson also indicated, is quite critical in the rural environments and also in peri-urban environments. I mean, we have been meeting with clients who have farms that are 10, 15 kilometers away from the urban environment. So those are not deep rural areas, but they are farms that are quite close to the urban environment. However, people are struggling to have access to jobs. We believe that our rural solution that we're presenting obviously provides the solution for those people as well. We also place a lot of emphasis on making sure that we spend a lot of time building the capacity and sharing the know-how that we have because of the relationship that we have built with our international partner who has been doing greenhouse farming across the world in close to 50 countries across the world. So we have been able to make sure that we mobilize the best expertise in greenhouse farming and also in the know-how of the open farming where necessary. We also believe that this model that we're presenting could really unlock a lot of economic advancement, particularly for people that would not otherwise have an opportunity. you would have noticed from the clip that the majority of the people that have spoken do not have a very high level of education. They would obviously would not have an opportunity to access the different work or employment opportunities. But we take them as they are and then in their own language train them how to actually run a greenhouse and make it a success, as you would have seen from the clip. Now, for us, we are trying to solve a problem that I believe all of us have realized and recognized. And as the chairperson has already said, this problem is not unique to South Africa. It's a problem in all over the world, but it's something that somebody has to deal with and mobilize. And we believe that in packaging the solution that we have packaged, we are able to be able to put on the table a very tangible thing that can be done and that services everybody who wants to make a difference in the rural environment. So from our side as COA, we have identified and analyzed and looked at the demand side. What are the crops that I need? Where is the demand? And which are the retailers that are needing a particular kind of crop? And secondly, we have spent a lot of time going to rural contexts, meeting with the local amakhosis, finding out how much land they can release and how much land they would want to make available both to greenhouses and also to open farming in their areas. We have spent a lot of time meeting with municipal entities, understanding their integrated development plan so that everything that we do is aligned with their own vision. We have spent an incredible amount of time also speaking with government officials to understand their provincial growth and development strategies. And then what we have done out of all those conversations is to package a solution that meets the requirement of all these parties in a way that is seamless, as that we have done and demonstrated in the small projects that we have piloted in Vulameso in Ugu. So really our view is that, as Chairperson was saying, our view to really meet or mobilize again around the agricultural sector in a similar way that we have done as a nation for 2010 is something very simple. I think it's something that is simple only obviously if we're all playing the roles that we're supposed to be playing. So we believe that we have what we could now call an implementation agency model that can actually make rural development a reality to many of the cooperatives and the SMEs or small farmers that are struggling at the moment. If you look at our business philosophy, let us just talk briefly about what it is exactly that we provide to the farmer. First of all, let me just point out which kind of farmers we work with. We work with the farmer who is currently struggling to expand their business. In other words, they are trying to find an economic opportunity in the retail sector that has not been availed to them because up to now they have been using their funds only for subsistence farming. So our job as COA is to really help the farmer to scale up their operation and also to create a relationship between them and the retailer and also to make sure that all the compliance that needs to be met in terms of the requirements of the specific retailer are being met. So we deal with people that already have farms, they're not at scale that is economic and viable, and also don't have markets. The second farm that we deal with is the farm that is struggling. In other words, the farmer has got their business processes incorrect, they have a problem with their crops, they have a problem with their staff, they have a problem with their financial management, and so on. And so we move into that particular farm and put together a turnaround strategy that help the farmer to then review the way it is doing business. Sometimes we advise them to go the greenhouse route, which is where our speciality lies, but sometimes we obviously have to help them in their open field farming to just turn around the business on their behalf. As we know, in the last few years, government has released a lot of land to our communities as part of the government reform program. But very few of these farms, unfortunately, have been operating optimally. And that is where we have been doing some of the advisory services and helping farmers to turn around their farms. And then we also help new farmers, people who have never started a farm, we don't know what to do. And obviously, because we specialize in the greenhouse farming as our area of experience, We prefer to drive that strategy with them. And there are a number of reasons why we believe that the greenhouse farming is part of the solution in the South African context. First of all, we deal with the fact that the produce that has been grown in a greenhouse is available or can be harvested for at least 10 months in the year. If you look at the open farm farming methodology, usually that is not the case. And that means that the income to the farm is not as regular as under a greenhouse technology methodology. So in other words, we are increasing the output that is out there and meeting the demand that is out there for produce that is coming from these farmers. The second thing why we believe that the greenhouse is preferred, and I'm not saying that it's the only solution, but it's the preferred solution, is because it gives regular income to the people that are working on the farm, the cooperative members that are working on the farm for the whole year. Whereas most of the crops that have been grown in an open field environment, those are seasonal jobs that people would get. So we are basically providing jobs that are sustainable for 12 months, creating obviously an environment in which people are able to look after their families and obviously look after themselves as well because of the regular income that they're getting. And then thirdly, the quality of produce that the greenhouse provides. I think the members of the portfolio committee that have seen and have visited our plant would have seen if they compared the open field product as well as the greenhouse product. It's chalk and cheese if you really compare it. We believe that the quality that is provided by this technology is of a standard that would be proudly displayed in any of the retailers in South Africa. However, the challenge has always been that our local farmers, especially our emerging farmers, would not have the quality, and hence we believe that the greenhouse solution provides the quality, and then they are able to meet with the very high standards of compliance for their retailers in terms of the meeting the standards. So as an organization, then those are the kind of farmers that we provide. And secondly, we believe that the greenhouse technology is the solution to go. The other thing that we do on behalf of our new farmers, because some of them might not necessarily have the expertise of pulling together the stakeholders, we also on their behalf have a conversation with the Amakhosis in some of the areas if they have not been able to do that. And the reason why it is important for that is because we need Amakhosi of the area to release the land, and we now have quite a lot of land that has been released. And Chair, you'll be pleased to know, I know that you noted it at the beginning, that one of the key challenges that people raised was that land was not being released. We have met with close to 50 Amakhosis now, in just in KZN alone, and the majority of them are willing to put land to use because at the moment it's simply not being utilized properly. We have also had, what we also do on behalf of cooperatives is to have a conversation with municipalities, because municipalities have come to the table in terms of consolidating the relationships with other government departments from an infrastructure point of view, whether there's a road, access road that needs to be built, whether there's water that needs to be provided, or whether we need electricity to be provided to that locality. All of that we do on behalf of our clients to make sure that the success of the farm is maximized. So we've also put in place on behalf of our clients off-take agreements with some of the retailers we've been able to meet with. We had a conversation, as Metmark was saying earlier, with Metmark 2 weeks ago. We are in the process of consolidating that relationship, meeting the requirements, and verifying and making sure that the crops demand that they need are going to be met by our clients. So basically, we're at a point now, Madam Chair, where we actually need the cooperatives on the ground to grow what we've already agreed to with, for instance, in this case, Metmark. So in other words, everything is ready. It just needs the local communities to agree to grow those specific crops, and then to move them across into the retail space. We we have organized, obviously, the parameters of all that needed to be organized. So in really, we as COAG are enabling farmers to really fast track their produce into the marketplace in a way that is sustainable. And we believe that those who are starting afresh and those who are expanding, greenhouse technology provides the absolute solution. I've already painted the picture about national benefits and the linkages to the NDP, which the Madam Chair has already said. I've already talked about how we can deal with the job creation. I don't want to dwell into that. But maybe the other thing that we do differently, which is not done by your normal agricultural consultancy, is that because we know the size of a greenhouse that we would call a commercial scale greenhouse, and we know how soon you make a profit in that kind of a setup, what we have also put in place is a finance management module for each of the farmers. What we do there is we teach our farmers how to look after their money first, as it comes in, look after it and grow it and multiply it through a wealth creation program, which we do with some of the asset management companies that are partnering with us. And we help the company to invest in funds and obviously in ways in which their service is actually growing, so that in case of any challenges that they might face in their businesses, they might be able to have a fallback in those difficult times. We don't want the farmer to eat what surplus they have. We want a portion of the surplus obviously to be invested, and that would be another way in which they are growing their wealth. And we have put a program in place with our asset management, financial asset management partners, to make sure that it's ongoing training that is provided to the farmer. Maybe to move on to the people behind the organization chair, we've already introduced the chairman, who is the visionary and the founder of COA Holdings, who saw the need for us to be involved in this kind of business. He has extensive experience as an entrepreneur involved in various sectors, but in the agricultural sector, he has done a lot of work also in Zimbabwe. And myself, I also have worked in the agricultural sector. I chaired the DEE Charter for Forestry, working with the Minister of Water Affairs about 4 years ago, and as I'm sure we all know now, that a council has been put in place and quite a lot is happening in the forestry sector in terms of meeting BEE requirements and making sure that there's a change in the sector. Our Chief Operating Officer is unfortunately not here. He's busy making sure that the tomatoes are getting to the retailer on a day-to-day basis. His name is Craig Michelle, and he is running our operations. The next page is really to give you a sense and the capacity that we have as the secretary of our management team. Maybe I'm just going to pick on three people there because those are critical people that are part of the value chain of COA. We have a tech house quality manager specialist, Stephen, whose job it is to make sure that our tech house is of the quality, and he has the experience having worked in similar operations and making sure that when we assist a farmer, obviously that is in place. What was said by Nesmart earlier, that they find themselves having to work and do more than what they would like to do, obviously that is part of what COA does as a normal operation. Bonke Bata, he is responsible for our compliance and making sure that the requirements, SADA requirements, quality requirements, compliance requirements have been met, and that is his day-to-day basis. Kanyisa, that you have seen here, is an agronomist now, is a farm manager, and given the expertise and the training that he has had in the last 24 months, he is now able to take on another farms under his wing to make sure that they perform optimally, as he has been able to make the Bulamiso project perform. So really, in conclusion, we also have put in place a very strong training and development team, and their job obviously starts from the time we erect the greenhouse up to the time when we're actually running and maintaining the greenhouse. And that team's job is to make sure that the transfer of skills between COA and the operation is done. We last normally today with the client for a period of a minimum of 5 years, depending on the speed with which they learn. But if they learn faster than that, obviously we would not need to be there. But we like to make sure that they would be doing their job and implementing their agricultural, growing growing in their farm as optimally as possible. So really, in summary, what COA does is to manage the whole value chain from growing the product right to the time that the produce is actually delivered in the door of the retailer. And we are wanting to obviously make sure that all the cooperatives and the SMEs across the nation are given the opportunity, because already the demand is there, and already the retailers are waiting for their produce. So it's just a matter of these SMEs and co-ops plugging into the integrated system that we have built, and then we are in business. Thank you, Chairperson.
Just to add one or two points from what our CEO just said, we also just want to put it on record that one of the big problems with developing rural peri-urban agribusinesses is funding. So it's cool. Well, we've realized that we had frustrations in acquiring funding to assist these SMEs and cooperatives. The systems of the grant funding that government gives sometimes take a very long time to have funds released. There's also a lot of red tape, which the chair has already mentioned, that they're trying to see how they can minimize that. But as COA, we are also looking at sourcing our own fund, which we are calling the COA Revolving Loan Fund. And we are currently in talks with an international funder to see if we can get this amount. And the talks we had are actually very encouraging, because the funder is in principle said that they are interested to assist us, but what they would like to see is also endorsement and support from our government, because they want to make sure that everything we're doing is also aligned to the government policies, and that there is indeed support from government. So this is something that we will want to discuss further as we go forward with small business development, to be the partner who can help us to facilitate this. The other thing is, as our CEO already mentioned, we start with greenhouses, but it's not all we do. It's not the only thing we do. We started that because of cash flow, to allow the farms to have monthly income. And then as they get stable in that, then we start to diversify into open fields, potatoes, grains. We're also having a honey project, food processing, herbs and medicinal plants like moringa. We're also talking to Nestle to put up chicory farms, and with FAB for yellow maize and hops. So these are the other things that have been coming as we progress. And also lastly, we have 29 international experts with master's degrees, PhDs, over 15 to 30 years of experience, who are associate partners at COA, who are specializing in every aspect of agriculture. From animal husbandry, grains, vegetables, fisheries, forestry, food processing, etc. So we thank you for giving us the privilege to present our model, and also the privilege thereof. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you on behalf of what I just want to thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee members, for the opportunity to share. These are one of the what we call in our business good business journey strategies that we are very passionate about. So I'm going to take you through the overview of what we do at Woolies around particularly enterprise and supplier development. The presentation itself was meant to cover broader ESG strategy covering other areas including clothing and services. But having listened to the focus of the day, I wish we actually had that before came here. I'm going to try and hone in to agriculture as much as we can. But also we offer an opportunity to, if we can, make a submission with much more detail on agriculture. So Lita will take you through some of the case studies that of projects we've done as a business. Just in terms of the approach, Woolies, in the way it buys, I think our business model, is structured in a way that really promotes supplier development. In 2007, I think, when the board decided to embark on this good business journey and the strategy, and the particularly transformation strategy, we looked at the business model and we realized that for as long as we existed as a business, we've grown suppliers from a large to tons. And we do that in partnership with the suppliers. So we're actually sounding old. We don't go buy and sell products. We actually make products, particularly in the agricultural space. We have a very big team of technologists in the space who go out overseas and do all sorts of research to understand what the trends are and come up with innovations and then go out and find suppliers for particular products, for different variations of different, particularly the product space. And then in 2007, the board decided to really put this as a strategy, as a business strategy, and we have now what we call a good business training strategy in the business. What that did, it actually communicated very clearly to the buying group that this is not a nice to have. The buying groups, buying products for work, they have in their strategies clear targets, looking out for small business development and yes, focusing on black economic empowerment. So it was a normal way to grow a supplier. What changed in 2007 is that they needed to also look out for black small businesses, black women-owned businesses, look out in rural areas for, you know, where we can source our products. So it sits in those teams, in the buying teams as a target. It sits in their KPIs, you know, the world fund KPIs. It also is linked to their incentives. So they're quite alive with that. And also what we did, because with our good business training strategy, we also look at environmental sectors, we look at like issues of child labor and all of those kind of things in our supplier base. We also put a lot of pressure in our suppliers, existing suppliers, to transform. So you find in some of the examples Lita is going to share that we do some of the small business development with our existing suppliers, big suppliers, because we believe they have a role to play as much as we do. Some of the key principles that have got us, I think, to where we are in terms of our enterprise development is realizing that, you know, whilst it can be quite exciting to get a group of small businesses into a room and teach them how to do a business case and market and all that, the one thing they need to grow as business is business. So Woolies committed that we will be market. So none of our enterprise and supply development beneficiaries are outside of our supply chain. So they either directly supplying Woolies or indirectly. So we guarantee business. When we get into a project, it's because there's a demand for a particular product and what has been done in that regard. And then our then is looking at how sustainable that can be. You know, can they grow? But also importantly, I'm sure you, some of you are, if not all, will this customers. It's just something about will this customers when they don't find the product on the shelf, they just go mad. So for us, availability is a big KPI. So if we put in a new supplier, and the product is on the shelf, and then customer loves it, the last thing you want to find is a situation where the product is not available. So availability is watched on a daily basis. So for us, when you put out and start a small business to supply a product, it's important that they're sustainable. We look out for any trace of threats
to sustainability of that particular business. And we put that into a development plan, and we access that business. Also, very important principle is the fact that these initiatives need to make business sense. So once the technologist and the buyer say we want the product for whatever reason, I'll take you through to speak through some of the drivers of our ESG. So once they make the call, we put together a business case that proves that the small business can be profitable. So we project how much we're going to buy of that product. Obviously, comparing with similar products, we project growth, at least 3 to 5 years growth of that project. And then from there, we can literally put together income statement for the small business to sort of say, if you buy this much, what will be your expenses? What do you need? What capital investment do you need? To the key, can you make profit? If it doesn't make profit, we don't get into it because it doesn't make business sense for anyone. Because the last thing you want is the buyer taking margins and the small business doesn't make profit. That arrangement is just not sustainable. And chances are the buyer will probably go and find an alternative. So on the other hand, we also do a business case from our side to sort of look, if we buy this product, we'll sell it at this amount and we make this much margin and it ticks our return on sales and then it's a good project. As a result, with our enterprise development loan fund, where we give out loans to the small businesses, we've had no default rate at all because the business cases are worked to the T, and later I take you through some of those later on. I think this slide just talks to why we do it. I think when the board made the decision in 2007, it was realizing that we are a corporate citizen, therefore, for us, it talks to our sustainability to contribute to socio-economic transformation of the country. Also important is the diversity of our supplier base. I think it's a myth if we say retail is not threatened by supply. We are. There are a lot of things that happen that kind of threaten retail in terms of supply of product. So sustainability or diversity of that supplier base also talks to sustainability of supply of products. We also said how sustainable are supply chains, and very also important is our customers seem to love the stories we tell about our products, where they come from, especially if we bring products from traditional existing big suppliers, and we bring them from rural areas and those kind of things. We tell our suppliers they buy more, they get an emotional attachment from them. And we also know that we have a contribution to make in really addressing the issue of South African issue of balance between imports and exports. We'll talk through that. Just in terms of the drivers, to give you a sense of probably asking how do we come up with all these initiatives, how do we decide on a product? Let me start on the left-hand side with innovation. So we must innovate quite a bit. In fact, innovation is one of our values. If you make a point of going to our stores every week, you probably have a new product or you treat a product. Because of that, we've used that as an opportunity to find, a entry for small businesses to suppliers. Also, because with innovation, you can start small and you can test the product. But one thing about our technology, they're very, very passionate about introducing any product, and they will make it work. This will take you through, for example, our gluten-free project, where we were getting from our customers a request for, supplying gluten-free for all sorts of obvious reasons. With a lot of our customers having, some intolerance or some kind of conditions. And we find that when we go to the buying groups and ask for what innovation is coming up, can that be set aside for startups, for small businesses, we find that they're actually quite open to that. Savings, I think if I can link savings with import replacement, we see more and more now our buying groups, looking for for opportunities to replace some imports. Our food business is currently about 90% local. You can't say the same at all with the clothing. So even with that, there's only the drive to look at what over 10% can we buy locally. One example there is avocados. You know, we import avocados from Spain at the time when South Africa can't give us avocado. That kind of sounds odd, but our customer wants avocado right through there. So there's been in about 3 or 4 years ago quite a deliberate strategy to look at how do we close that Spain import gap for avocados. And we can tell you now that we've managed to do that, not completely, but that gap is closing. We found an avocado spot in the Eastern Cape. Unbelievable. So, and that project will give us avocado at a time when the other areas, well-known avocado areas in the country, can't. And the business saved a lot of money there, and the customers, because I'm sure when you see avocado at all times of the year, you pay quite a premium. Market share increase, I'll use an example there. We had a situation, so Lisa and I were scouting around where products where there is a higher demand than the supply. We discovered a while ago that we didn't meet our demand for lettuce in some years. And we picked that up and we started a project in that regard. And lettuce is one of those things that we know that draws out a lot of our customers' feet into the store. We couldn't afford that. So contrary to popular belief that transformation or small business development, you know, doesn't really add to the bottom line, the buying group is very excited to have a project that could give them letters to the levels that it reduces availability or unavailability of letters at the time when the customer needs it. So we look at those, and we're losing market share there big time. And that is not one of the products we have to lose market share on as a business. Brand building, some of these initiatives we do because who we are, because we are about a difference. And for us, you know, when we link that, as I mentioned earlier, it really talks to the customer's heart in a big way. Brand, we found ourselves also regionalizing by. So we've had in the past one supplier supplying Woolworths nationally. So we have to challenge ourselves in terms of what we say we believe in, that we will cut carbon emissions and all the beautiful green challenges. And we said, no, it can't work out like that. So let's find products where we could source them regionally and supply the regional stores. So some of the initiatives come up because of that. So we're happy to keep the existing supply up in Joburg, and then we say we want the regional buy for that particular product in the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and therefore we go out looking for that. Especially if that product can be grown in that province, because in some instances our technologies are very clear in terms of what grows where and which products they would want to get from which province. But I must say, with climate change, which is linked to that screening comment, with climate change, we're finding ourselves quite challenged in terms of where we thought we would get certain products. So, as I said, now we get Avon Eastern Cape in Adelaide, who thought we would get that, and now they're doing all sorts of studies to check where else can we get products. And then when we do that, they will go and look for small business development and opportunities. And the obvious one is, yes, we get a lot of empowerment done through these initiatives. We've got a couple of models in place. So we've got a model that really looks at direct supply, where we start up or we find a small business and they directly supply Woolworths. We always welcome those. But also we think there's room for indirect supplier development. Because we've got a concept of farm to fork as a business, where we want to trace every ingredient in your salad, and be able, if anything goes wrong to the customer, we're able to trace it. We therefore can, because also we put pressure on our suppliers to transform, we can form a tripartite agreement with the supplier and say, you know, we want in the salad a particular product, and by the way, you have an opportunity as a supplier to actually develop and, you know, contribute in a way. So we have a project, for example, where they supply baby spinach to Info Foods, which is our prepared food supplier, and we contribute to that project. We've given them finance, then we get close to it, we do the development. The supplier looks into the technical spec of the product, make sure that they deliver on time and the volumes that they need to make the salad. So there's a bit of that. In fact, there's a lot of that in the produce space. And also because some of the challenges in the produce space is infrastructure. So you find that the emerging farmer yes has the product, but not in the big enough volumes to justify a pack house facility, because a pack house can be quite expensive, and also for it to really be viable, you need quite a lot of product moving through it. And then we link them up to a supplier. I'm not going to touch on the franchising and micro retailing. Do that with Engine, and I try to focus on the produce side. A typical ESD project, weekly, if you look at the triangle on your right-hand side, we turn to the key how much we're going to grow that business for 3 to 5 years. So the buying group will say we're projecting sales to grow this much. We've got projects that have really surprised us. We've got one project where when we did a business case, we thought it's going to grow at 15%, growing at 70%. But at least to put a peg on the ground and estimate and make the buying group commit to that. And then our support diminishes. So we almost graduate these businesses out of the program. Just to make sure that they're not too comfortable. Obviously, with a lot of annual reviews, checking how they're doing against their development plan, are they delivering, also checking how fast they're growing, because sometimes we've discovered that growing fast can break their backs as well. So we need to monitor, are they growing too fast, what does that mean, what do we need to put in place. And also the other thing we look at is tailor-made financial and non-financial support. I must say one of the biggest ahas for me is how each and every initiative we have is different, completely different. If we keep an open mind on what they need and not be prescriptive, it's amazing what kind of creativity comes up. Sometimes it's around the entrepreneur himself or herself, where you have to put the pen around the person. Whether the person is a technical entrepreneur who knows how to do the thing, or they are a businessman and doesn't know how to do the thing, so you need to work around those things, and a whole lot of circumstances. So these become very unique, development plans, tailor-made for them. And some need financial support and some don't. And then later we'll take it to maybe Steve Pumshoes, though it's a very... one of those case studies where it literally grew from first year 36 million to 76 million in the second year, and then we had to put a different development plan in place, but take it through the more agricultural processing case studies.
Okay, thank you. I just need you to cover an example, just to showcase the type of work that goes into a project. We'll also showcase in terms of how we do our analysis and also count intervention, and also how do we check and what do we track. All right. As we know, those who are gluten intolerant will understand that most of the gluten-free products are imported. And most of them, they are not necessarily fresh, but very frozen. And the challenge for that is that they are very expensive. So what we needed to do we saw that there was an opportunity to do a gluten-free product. And when that opportunity arises, we actually challenged the buying team, the bakery, to start coming up with a transformation angle to the project. Right. So the factory was actually built in Belleville, St. Peter, all right, brand new. We were able to invest 2.2 million rand. It's linked to our supplier, and also it's communal owned, and also there is staff ownership on it. And the web ownership on the project is about 70%. And when we did that, we anticipated that in year one, we're actually going to make 15 million sales, and our trading team has told us that it has exceeded that. And over and above, we're looking at very alien products instead of bread and so forth, but now we're also looking at snacks in terms of gluten-free products, and we're expanding the range in terms of the product offering. And through that, we were able to make 15 million sales from Woolworths. The supplier was able to make 10 million sales. Contributed to our transformation PE in terms of black ownership, in terms of the loan facilitation that we provided. And we created 30 new jobs straight from that project. They've already come back last week to say they actually want to expand. So we are looking at actually now looking more at expanding the range of the products. So this is just one example where this was more innovative. It was a product that was not produced in the country. We were able to bring it into our local shoes. All right, I'll skip this one with the so hard. I'll do that. All right. We had, in 2013-2014, as well as we had a challenge where we did not meet our sales targets on Brassicas and 10 of them. We actually were undersupplied by 10 million rand. That's what we lost on our bottom line straight up by not having the product. And that was caused by many things. Weather issues on that year was a challenge. Our suppliers, there was strife.
Sorry to interrupt. Could you just explain what Brassica is?
Okay, we put a picture there. All right. No, we call it, that's the word we use in our team. We normally, because it's made out of broccoli and cauliflower. So we call it tender. Sorry for that. It's just a term that we use in the information.
I think it's a category term for different variations of tender stem broccoli, you know. Tender stem is the small one that is like
All right, apologies for that. All right, we invested 4.9 million rand. This project is in Gauteng. We invested 4.9. All right, it's 51% black, female-owned project, and it's linked to a supplier. So what our supplier did in this instance is that they said they'll provide access to the packing house and also access to the, you know, they also got supply chain to do staging, and from there it goes to our DC. So we're able to make that link an indirect, but with open line, what we normally do in this project, when it's indirect, we say, it's up to you to grow yourself to be direct. We provide all the opportunities and the access to finance. And it also depends on each ambition of each supplier. Some are comfortable to be indirect. Some are very not comfortable. I'll show you on the third project. We've taken someone from being an indirect supplier to actually becoming a direct supplier. All right. In this project, from our side, we anticipated we're going to make about 71 million rand sales from this project, of which the black entity here will make about 46 million. All right. Remember, this took from almost non-existent entity. All right. But you can see over time, they're actually going to grow into a serious player in terms of fresh produce. And again, it contributes to our transformation objectives that we want, and 83 new jobs straight up on the project. All right. Again, these are jobs that were not there originally. Okay. And the third one is one of those that is closer to my heart. I don't know how to say it in English. I'm sorry. All right. Those are African chickens. And we wanted to do the project. This project is in, for those who come from Limpopo, it's in Bela Bela. We found it was Dr. Matare was doing a very small eggs producer. He had about 6,000-7,000 birds. And we started this line, the Indigenous Eggs, about last year. All right? He was doing about 600,000 a year because we're selling to our supplier, Goma, who's also Joburg, and also to the informal sector. All right? And when we decided to go to them, because the growth of these eggs were such a rate that we needed to actually start to develop them, we invested 2.7 million rand on the project. to build a brand new house. And although we stopped him, we said for the next 2 to 3 years, we want you to grow your beds from 6,000 to 20,000 beds. And also, we want to make sure that you become a direct supplier within 3 years. So we started this project very early last year. And to our amazement, we have no choice. By Easter time, it has to come direct. So we're going to have Conquest a supplier, and that will be supplying us direct. And this story is very exciting because I think that Delta used to run it as a passive business. Now we have no choice but actually to be 100% involved in the project. All right. These are just examples of the type of project that we're doing, notwithstanding that there are serious challenges when you do this project. Because now the Samatari from making 600,000 now, first order for us, year one, 3.7 million rand. That was first year order. And now he needs to be able to understand our merchandising, supply to our DC, making sure that the quality is there, because that something is forever going to be managed on. And we're lucky that our technical team were able to go there and support him. In fact, we're even going to be in some time next month to just check how he is doing. But over and above this, there are other opportunities in terms of liquid eggs that he can supply to the bakery. Our bakery suppliers that do that use egg as raw material. So some of the projects, we're not only supplying the core product, we also link it to other projects that do other suppliers that use that particular product as raw material. All right. So basically from our side, to summarize, every project has to make commercial sense. To our commercial sense is that Woolworths must make money. All right? If we make money, the supplier will make money. It goes without saying, as the ads still are going up, Dr. Vitalis has to step up in terms of his capacity. There's no choice. All stakeholders have to have a common vision, which I know that my small colleague, Mr. Ndumo, knows, cooperative, that's magic. It doesn't get in every stakeholder to a shared vision, most especially when money starts to come in. We really try to make everyone to see the same picture. And if we don't even start the project. But every project we do is well scoped and well planned. Again, I'll touch on how the challenge is sometimes dealing with some state entities. Because in retail, everything is time bound. So if I need to do a papaya project that needs to start in October to supply, I cannot wait till October till the committee sits somewhere and actually approves it. Because once that happens, that opportunity is gone. Unfortunately, in the retail, once you don't deliver, buyers move on. And sometimes that window of opportunity is once, and once you lose it, you never get again. So sometimes that makes our work very difficult from our side. And we look at all risks. The reason why we look at risks, we say, what else to have that we need to know? And we work with our risk. We do have a risk division within Woolworths that we work with in terms of analyzing the risk and mitigation, and also who's responsible for those mitigations, right? Then in terms of the product support mix, this is where each project is different. What the Kamakai needed is not the same as the guy who's doing plastic cards, not the same as a different supplier. So it's a holistic process. We have to look at each individual and package our support based on their needs, right? Then monitoring evaluation is part of what you do. Working with every project we do, our buyers and technologies, they go to that project every 2 to 3 months, sometimes every month, to make sure that they are delivering, they are on track with their supplies, they get their order. We call it a growing program in the agriculture to say, this is what we want, this is the time we want it, and they get measured how far they are in delivering. So that if they do, we can make alternative plans. So monitoring evaluation is very important from our side. Most importantly, openness is very important. We want to know what we all do know, because we don't want surprises to start to crop up as the project is moving on. We want openness, and also we want commitment. All right? So we don't want someone who, if someone loves their festive, they want to be on holiday, they mustn't bother going to agriculture. So those are the type of commitments that we say people should do, because it's extra effort, but the nice thing that it comes with extra rewards in terms of the procurement from our side. All right. Then in conclusion, from working with the state, access to finance is a real issue. It's the DRAS issue, not just access to it, but the timing of it. We're picking up a lot of money, but the timing just is out of sync. All right, so we need to start work together to understand that we work in an environment in retail where everything's time bound. All right, a summer crop is a summer crop. You can't approve it in summer. One has to understand that. All right, secondly, access to business support. Those who've been in the industry long enough will know in the past, we used to have the KitMex and the HowMex. We're still looking at your medium companies. It's sort of a in the country, no particular support for medium growing businesses. Right? We do work with seed and so forth, but they are great in people who are starting up. But when someone has started up now, they make 10, 15 million, there seems to be no particular support service in the industry. All right? Which is very important. Because, again, in the retail, in particular in food, it's easy to grow from a 5 million supplier, like Dr. Mahat Kave. He could be 6 million within 5 years. And the type of support he needs at different stages is different. All right? So we need that type of support that we need to look for. All right? Access to technical support, very important. We know that there are institutions, TIA, CSIR, and other entities. But when you look at agricultural, you know that there is ASPA also. Some of them are not in sync with what to do. For example, we had to work with the Extension Office of Agriculture because the guys there, they don't know half or 53% of what our team know, just from a knowledge level. And now it becomes difficult to work with those type of entities. We would like to work with them. Definitely we like to work with them. I'll give an example. Last week we went to see in Portugal a project that is sponsored by Agriculture Western Cape. And it's a peabody project. It was clear when the POC South Africa, I think the POC Association of South Africa, did an assessment. They said for this unit to be an economic viable, they need to slaughter 300. For which the government funded only for it to slaughter 170. And they said we don't have money. So without even going forward, it's not even breaking even. All right, so part of what we discussed with the department is that rather put the rest of the money or you can write off what you put in already. Because from a business perspective, you're going to lose money if you don't continue up until a certain point where it makes money. From a witness, you're prepared to come in and work with you, right? And those are the small type of things where you find the project half-heartedly and not find it in full in terms of the project to be economically viable, all right? Another aspect that is very important to us is also coordination between different government entities, from the DTI to Department of Agriculture to, you know, because part of the competencies, like when we do seafood projects, we have no choice but to go to the fisheries. And the projects are not necessarily aligned to what the instances of DTI are doing. And sometimes there's not even a single view on how to do certain projects. All right. At the other side, we're excited. We want to do things like aquaculture. But the challenge is, where do you get the support? It's very expensive, but there's no singular view. And when you want to start small business in the aquaculture, they're caught between a national policy that is not clear in terms of what needs to be done to take aquaculture. We're excited about the Pakistan initiative that is there. We're hoping that we'll be able to leverage out of it. Then other aspects are issues of labor. Right? We wanted to set up an entity to do footwear in BE. Those who are old enough will know BE used to be a hub for footwear. And obviously, because of imports, the area started to sort of die. We wanted to do a value sleep-up shoe, right? And we have our team who costed it and said, this is a 1 million opportunity. We funded a black supplier. Only to find out that if we give them that opportunity, they use the point system there in terms of how much you pay your labor. By us doing the project, it was going to take them where they are now, they are on 4 points, and they can pay 75% of the labor costs. When we got the project, it pushed them to 100% labor costs, and it made it unsustainable. So we even tried to talk to different bargaining companies to say, look, can you give this project a dispensation? This will be the first black person who is to supply a sleeper. And we didn't get a favor of the bullet candidate. And we've got a very unsatisfied lady, Roxanne, in BE, who almost got in. And that's the sad part about it. So from our side, we say we want to work with all stakeholders. We want to have a clear project. I mean, we've got another one, we've told now, a chocolate one. There was a lady called Nondwenge. She had a circuit next to the airport, funded via CIFA, who used a wholesale financing. So the CIFA gave money to someone else to land. And when CIFA had an issue, a dispute with their retail financier, they wanted their money. When Nondwenge got supplied for a year, that retail financiers, they actually took the money from her and liquidated her. So that would have been our first black female-owned chocolatier supplier, and we lost her overnight. All right, and that money is linked to public finance. It was a very good goal. It took us about 2 years to get it in. All right, and there are other issues like VAT registration. If you don't make a little rent, you can't get a VAT number. And those things are very important because we take people who don't have businesses and we want to give them opportunities, 3 million, and we can't register them even on our supplier base because then there's a VAT number and staffs will never allow them to have a VAT number. So these are just examples of challenges that we are facing. We hope that things like your small business policy, the last one I think was done in 95 when Mandy was still a DCR, we want those policies to be done and also to align to the new policies that we have now. All right.
Madam, I understand there's been a request to cut the punch.
I'm not sure how many of our ladies that are here actually buy those punch shoes. All right. Okay. Just to give you all your daughters. She's marvelous. We should give you one free, eh? All right. The pump shoes. Oh, gosh. This is a statue that was done by Germans. So actually closing. And Ahmad used to was working at the factory. He decided with the rest that no take over the factory will support you 100%. Right? But she had challenges. So in the footwear, those who know about the industry, most of the leather comes from Pakistan. Right? And if you don't pay up front, you get the worst part of the leather. You can imagine some of the shoes that are wrinkles, that are leather shoes. It means you get the worst part of the leather. And the ones who get the best part are the ones who pay up front. So she was struggling with that, all right? She was struggling with cash flow. All right? The cash flow one, again, it's a very sore heart for me because we were paying her within 7 days, but we are not their only suppliers. The chief supplier is police. I think she does correctional services. We're paying, I don't know, 250 days and so forth. So at that rate, it's drained the cash flow. All right? And although she had debt, serious debt, because she had to borrow money to actually get the factory to be up to speed. And also she was operating in a 1,800 square meter. And the biggest challenge is that these pumps are the biggest selling item in our women's wear. So you can imagine the demands that she could not meet. In this instance, again, with the first part about the government departments which are not paying their time if she gets money to be paid, we worked with IDC, we worked with DTR to actually, and also worked with Productivity SA to get her up to speed. We put 1.9 million for her to buy leather. So she could be able to buy the leather upfront and you get the part. IDC put in about 9.5 for a new property. So she was operating a smaller one, as I said, in Barrow and moved to a bigger facility. And the other financing IDC did was total about 41 million rand that they put into the project. All right, we make sure that we pay in 7 days from the date of invoice. And we monitor that every month because we don't want any financial issues. We moved from being a 60-40 business, we moved to make sure that we become something like a 90-10. So even if there's 10% customers are paying her in time, she won't really feel the financial constraint in the business. All right. DTI, through the cluster that we did, we worked with the footwear cluster to set up other small black suppliers to supply her raw material. So you're an expansion of your main project. And they gave a 20 million grant for that road exercise, which took it from a position of being highly geared to not being geared at all. Alright. So her production could reduce significantly because she got new machinery. Labor quantity was superior. There were no issues of return. She used to do about 7,200 a week. Currently, she does for us alone 500,000 a year. Alright, she moved to a 4,000 square meter. She used to, in 2012, she had 96. Today, she's got about 250 people working for her. And this is not the end of it, because those people are going to expand to other ranges. Imagine if you do it for kids and so forth. That is the capacity that would be required, is going to be far more. This is just, again, another example in the very difficult area of closing the takeout of the projects that we're doing. But in closing, for us, food is a big spinner in terms of where we want to project, because it lends itself in terms of local sourcing. We are working on import replacement program. Currently, we're busy with a pet food supplier. We're gonna stop importing pet food or pet food products, and that project is going to start applying next year. All right, we're working on a tin supplier set up who used to buy all our tins in China. Currently, we're going to move 50% of the tins local. Right? And those are just an example of the things that we're doing within the food trade. So I'll give over to Susan if she wants to say any last words. From my side, I think I've completed. Thank you very much.
I think just in closing, looking at the past 3 years of our program, we did a bit of an accounting. We created about 808 jobs just from the program. In terms of procurement opportunities, we're sitting at about 750 million going to this. And I mean, we shared with you a few. We probably shared six. But we're sitting with those that are not graduated yet. We're sitting at 53, small businesses that we support. But big thing for us is partnership. We realize that we can't do it alone. Some of the projects that are coming our way, getting 20 million rand investments, and that's the kind of money you can ask a profit-making business like Woolworths. But we know that there's quite a lot of money that we can access from the country and particular government. And where we block again is understanding how we work, understanding issues of time, and understanding, just taking time to understand our business model and being able to align with that in making sure a project is successful. We have in many occasions walk away from government agencies in terms of funding. And when they come back 2 months later, we tell them, no, we've done it. They're like, how can you? They always ask, how can you? Lending, I can lend them. So, yes, but we very desperate for partnerships. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation and your honesty. We really want to hear the hindering factors, because we are here to deal with those. And we have the last one. Ms. Rufa here?
Yes.
Thank you. I see that the presentation of Rufa is big. If Rufa can just zoom to the subject we are talking about, mainly the enterprise development and recreation.
Madam Chair and all colleagues present, I will be very short. I'm going to cut through a lot of things. As you know, BUSA puts mostly in the policy space. So we, many of our members advise government and government agencies on a number of policies, policy interventions. For example, the ease of doing business in South Africa is a bit of a challenge, but we've worked together with the tax committee, we've worked together with a number of other agencies to shorten the period of establishing a business in South Africa. Currently, according to the World Bank, we are listed 41 on the list, and it takes some time to open up a business in South Africa. I'm going to jump to National Development Plan quickly.
As you can see, the National Development Plan emphasizes the role of SMME. It says that countries contribute to 40% of total GDP, and it accounts for more than 60% of all employment in South Africa. Very importantly, we see an act of culture in South Africa to start doing your own business. And from BUSA's side, especially the chambers within BUSA, we decided to roll out a business empowerment project on a very, very large scale, and we work with a number of funders in regard to that, and I'll come to that at a later stage. I'm just going to jump what the National Development Plan says. You're familiar with all the prescriptions in that plan. Very importantly, just the last point in the National Development Plan, it refers to the role of municipalities. It said there that human settlements and services will need to be conducive to small and medium enterprise expansion. We have now, within the chambers, we have appointed a full complement of people who understand local economic development and who can work together with municipalities to ensure that we create an environment where small businesses can thrive. I'm just going to move on this. This is with the International Development Plan. And then very importantly, it promises a number of things. You're well aware of that. We need to simplify the regulated environment. We must ensure 30-day payment to smaller suppliers. And we must make government procurement opportunities more accessible to small businesses. These things are all contained in the State of Nation address, and the Minister of Finance will also refer to this afternoon. We see a number of business reforms also. We have made taxes, the payment of taxes easier, trading across borders. There were a number of steps taken to reduce the red tape to start a small business. Very importantly, we have also now introduced a number of other steps within departments. But research tells us that the challenges remain. And these are the type of things it's listed here that we need to work together. And it's not an overnight approach, or you cannot solve these problems overnight. But I believe when private sector, public sector, community, if we all work together, we can really create an environment where people want to start their own businesses and where they can be successful. Very importantly, the BUSA chambers, as I've said, we've embarked on our own program, and we focus on a very extensive training scheme. And the scheme consists of the following. We teach people about vision and vision, the business values, the business strategy, and very importantly, the business offering, business administration, business resources, business environment, business safety and security, business networking. And then, very importantly, we compare to the body of a human being. The arms on either side, the left arm employees, the right arm employers, and then the role of your legs and feet. That we compare to business monitoring and business evaluation, telling you whether your business is going forward or whether it's sliding backwards. And we use this tool to show young and up-and-coming and even existing business people that you need to take your body to the doctor every year to do a proper diagnosis. Where are your weaknesses? Where are your strengths? How can you address any of these body parts so that at the end of the day you have a fully functional business body or business operating business? If any one of these parts are not functioning optimally, then you're going to have a problem. Very importantly, our current program consists of identifying stakeholders. We work through chambers. We work very closely with CBAR, CEDA, and then we identify startups within communities. We have a number of training programs, and then we have the business plan, and each of these partners that we are involved with, they must supply mentors, coaches, and then very importantly, we work with CIFA to assist these young people with finance, and then very importantly, infrastructure support. That for us is key, and we've seen it in many, many smaller towns. If those young people work on their own, they are doomed.
So we supplied with chartered accountants within those chambers, supplied them with a number of other specialists so that they really have a proper infrastructure support base. Training done so far, we've been tested at Hammanskraal, Wasselbeek, George, Robertson, Bonnieville, Bethelsdorf, and Abelpark, Oudtshoorn, Sittikamer, Gansbeek. We've been to the Kwatu Sun Capsule Centre near Lattes, Potterstorm, Kloppe, Modemole, Olivenhulbosch, Woodhavel, Malmestree, Bredasdorf, Kokwa, Double, and Meidenberg. And this program we will be expanding this year. Obviously, we are not a business, so we depend on funding from a range of role players. We haven't received any funding from government thus far, but hopefully, as we establish a good relationship with the small business ministry, we will can be able to access funding so that we can really create a culture of entrepreneurship in every town in the country and work together with municipalities so that they can also create a conducive environment for small businesses. And then very important statistics, my instance is there the Belgian Based Business Chamber. We work very closely with Toyota South Africa, AFSA, and also the local chambers. Our participants, 70% black, 50% white, 7% of them are female. And then 60% of participants continue to actively engage in local chamber activities. And this is for us is crucial, because a local business chamber provides access to opportunities, it creates a support network, and people learn the art of economic organization. And we've seen it, where local chambers are very active, and where it knows no bounds, the possibilities of xenophobic attacks becomes less, because people know they've got a future, they've got a particular vision, and they organize themselves economically. So that is crucial. And then local chambers, as I've said, provide greater access to the value chain, and then also involving the businesses. For example, in Bonnieville, we've got Parmalat, BP's factory, so they provide smaller business opportunities to these startup entrepreneurs. Coca-Cola and Clarendal, and many of our bigger other, companies in other towns, we encourage them to provide business opportunities for startup entrepreneurs. There you can see we had all of these young entrepreneurs at the conference last year, together with the Minister of Small Business, and for the first time, many of them flew in an aeroplane, many of them attended an organized business conference, they learned the art of networking, and many of them even stepped in a big hotel for the first time. So this is what we do to really move to take people out of their comfort zones, out of their local conditions, and we really take them to another level where we open up their eyes and very importantly also their understanding of the world of business. These young people are comfortable, very active, and all busy involved in startups there. And these were young people from Robertson that we've trained, and here we had our overseas donors from Belgium also attending this. And the idea is to take some of them overseas at a later stage so they can learn also different types of business. What we found with many of the young people is a lack of ideas. And we need to inculcate a spirit, a culture of creative thinking. Many a time I do lots of training myself when I ask them, right, put some business ideas on the table, most of them want to become the regular thing, like starting up a hairdresser business or a taxi business. And we need to broaden their scope of thinking. We need to incorporate a culture of innovative thinking. Very importantly, this is a lonely job. And we find that many young people, when it becomes Friday afternoon, they ask us, but we want to stop with the training, it's weekend. And we often tell them, listen, if you want to become a business person, there are no holidays, there are no weekends involved. Right? It's personal sacrifice. And yes, not everyone in this country will ever be able to become a businessman or a businesswoman, but it takes a special kind of person. Learn from the Pakistanis, learn from these Somalis. Look how they operate. They operate 5 hours a day, not even 24 hours a day. So yes, that's the influencing role that we play. We've been busy with this for the past 2 years, and we hope we can really expand this nationally. We work very closely with the Black Business Council, we work very closely with NAPOC, and we want to ensure that all of organized business movements embrace this vision
of turning the South African nation into a nation of entrepreneurs and a nation, more importantly, of enterprise thinking, because that's where it all starts, the enterprise thinking. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I will now give an opportunity for members to ask questions and make comments. I know that we are pressed with time. If we can be out of here by God of us, I would appreciate it. Honorable Kruger, followed by Honorable Charles, Honorable November, Ramaphosa, Mabasa, and then Laupu, in that order.
Thank you, Mache, and thank you for the presentations. Mache, of the presentations, I think it's evident that big business is not the big bad wolf, and that we as government and as politicians need to go back to the drawing board and strategize to be more effective in giving support to small business development. I just want to ask one question to Kaua. Is it Kaua? Eh? Yeah. If they can just give us, he mentioned that in his strive to make his projects work with a lot of red tape, if he can just give us a few examples of this regulatory burdens that his projects face. Thank you, ma'am. I will leave the other two questions for another day because I think I've got another time. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentations. I think, Chair, this committee achieves one thing in its remaining 4.5 years of its term, the same applies to the department, and that is to resolve this problem. We will have earned our keep as a department. So the nice thing was the committee, because I think that this is going absolutely central to the serious problems that this country has in terms of unlocking entrepreneurialism and trying to find a way of reducing the dependence on large companies. Now, I want to take us quickly back to the presentation that Fick and Pay gave us, where they gave us some very interesting statistics this last year about the number of large businesses, medium businesses, and small businesses supplying them. And if you recall, they had 1,682 small suppliers representing 78% of their total suppliers, but they only contribute 12% of their turnover. Whereas the 55 multinationals and large South African companies supplying them represent 3% of their suppliers, but contribute 68% of the turnover. Now, I would like to propose, Madam Chair, that the committee sets up a working group which has as its goal to understand the nature and the dynamics of the marketplace, to see if the way in which working with the retail industry and possibly with BUSA and also with National Business Initiative, who I have consulted on this matter and have expressed a keen interest to involve themselves in this project, that we see if the retail sector transforms itself and buys more of its products from small businesses, who I would imagine are much more labor-absorptive than large businesses that rely on technology. What the impact will that have on job creation and total wages earned? But I've done some calculations, back of the envelope calculations, but I don't have data. And we need to have a serious conversation with the retail industry. They need to be prepared to open their books, not to allow the competition to steal a march on them, but we have to understand the nature of this industry. Who is supplying whom at what cost, and what is their labor absorption rate? Because the priority of this economy is to create jobs. So I would like to propose, Madam Chair, that we create a working group from this committee, obviously working with the department if necessary, and engage the retail sector and other institutional stakeholders that will enable us to answer this question and actually pin down the nature of opportunity to empower small businesses and create jobs. Before I go, one interesting statistic is that Mr. Leroni, in his presentation, indicated that they intend to spend 50 million rand this year on these initiatives, which represents 0.07% of their turnover last year. So whilst I agree with my colleague on my right that the private sector is doing something, it's on a minuscule scale compared to what is required to have a serious impact. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two or three comments. One, I start off with the last presentation. Is it Busbach? Busbach das Buch opened that in Metanid has got one. It's just a comment. I don't like to hear that, that Metanid has got. Mr. Fanala. Mr. Fanala, so they've got. Okay. Thank you. Kruger. Yes, me busan. And you play of money than you best cap. How do the second one is the comment. It's Woolworths. Woolworths is not, we do not have Woolworths in all the places, but the bigger places, then most of them don't have the Woolworths food. Like in Upington, we do have Woolworths, but no Woolworths food. It's just a comment. Koa, we were there. We've seen it for ourselves. And thank you for whatever you are doing. We were there, we've seen for ourselves. Because I'm sure it's the policy of this committee. Singotomas, we want to fill a wound. But in your executive, can't you recruit another two women, at least the scale of women in your executive? Also with COA, it's just a little bit. It's the numbers of farmers or farms that we have helped. You're doing a very good job that we've seen, but the number of the farmers that we've helped out is not really visible here. And which one is it? Smart. Oh. Much with the cooler boxes in Paris. That's much, eh? Yeah, no, thank you for that. I know Tumaka is just a small one state town, but you're doing a good job. The only thing with much, they talk there with the first slide or on the first page about nine professionals. To me, I thought that the nine professionals will be divided into the nine provinces. That's also something that we have to think about in the near future. And yeah, Chairperson, let me not ask questions, but just comment now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to talk on Matt first, Chair. I think in his opening, the presenter indicated is the adding something like 1.25 or something in the general GDP, if I get it right. Okay. But I'm saying, looking at what Honorable Chancellor has said, I would in fact support that. I don't want to say if it is a committee or what, but I think we need another time to sit down with the tailors and get into the issues now, the practical issues. Generally, the things sound well. They sound to be very positive and so on, but our experience is that we need to have now specific, because we are a new department, so that when we drive on the basis of a good monitoring and evaluation tool, because everybody here have talked of monitoring and evaluation, but we need to go deeper into what is that monitoring and evaluation, how is it benefiting us? After we have done it, because it can't be every time, at the end of the day, it's monitoring and evaluation, but at the end of the day, another day, you don't see results. So we need to concretize our discussions today. Find that we have put it, then we have got a soil to stand on and discuss other issues. Because, matter of fact, they are the fifth competitive in the country, in the country. So, if you talk that, it is what we say. We can't again be looking at the percentages you are giving us. To how they sound big, but according to what you have presented, they are not. So we need to get into that very importantly. The other thing is the issue of the difficulty for agrarian food supply due to existing mindset on foreign dependence. That is an issue that we need also to work with from the government point of view. Because the government has got very clear policies on us. We have got the BEDLEX, we have got our reference where we have agreed on how we deal with it. And if it is a challenge to you, then we need to deal with it around the legislative perspective. We need to look into something that will make sure that our people go to where they are, to the direction the government is showing them. That is how we will deal with our economy at the department. The other one is, when you deal with the CIFAs, the IDC, the NS, we have yet everybody thinking about it. We need also to sit down and look. How are your engagement? What are the binding mechanisms here? Because people mention we deal with IDC. When we go there, you find that this is an IDC sponsor thing. But it doesn't sound as like when you put it here. Because we don't know what was it, how did it go at the end of the day, how do you monitor it. And at the end of the day, again, your accountability election of the people you always assist. There are many people mention that they get assistance, but when you want to know how did you get these people, you find sometimes they are not even in any organized culture of business. They are not even part of the cooperatives. When you say we have assisted SMEs, when we want SMEs, we have got organized structures in townships where we work with them. And we find that those people who are sitting, they don't even appear. They are not part of those structures. Those are things that we have to look at in our meeting so that we consolidate. The power is only one clarity that I want to know. On this issue of the organic food, I'm in agriculture, but I just want to find out on the organic food and the high-tech food. We do not have any challenges around the legislations or anything that might affect it negatively, as it goes, because we are saying now we want to go it to a massive stage when you want to see a country talking about it. Now, you know, sometimes when it's on small scale, it doesn't sound, it doesn't make any noise, but when it comes countrywide, things drops out now. People start to say this food is part of this one, you start to get a standard of the things. And now the Woolworths, I think it has been mentioned, we always want to know now exactly so that we compare the top 808 jobs. Let's go sit down and now look into the 3 billion you're talking about and 53 small businesses. So that you assist us as the fair itself. We want to be assisted now in the way forward after having met with you, and I support the proposal here. Thank you. No question.
Thanks, Colleague Chair. My first point is just to thank all the presenters for having honored the meeting. We really appreciate. But the question, I know that in general, the role that our presenters expect the PC to play has here and there been intact, but it would be good if every organization can articulate and say this is the role that we think or we proposed portfolio committee plays so that we get it succinctly. And then the violence that that happened recently in the townships, what role do our presenters think they should play to help the small businesses and cooperatives grow such that they are able to such that we don't have this type of violence that we've had, you know? What role do you think you can play? And the last one is the fund. This one is directed to MassMart. The fund that was to be set up, what is the progress around that fund? how it's accessed, how it is used, what its value, when we look, when we evaluate. Let me end there, Kovic.
Thank you, Chairperson. I join my colleagues in thanking all the presenters. Two questions to COA. The first one is about the comparison that the CEO made between greenhouse farming and open land farming. She said it's like chop and cheese. Now, if there is such a difference in the quality of products, is there anything they are doing to try and increase the knowledge that people should have about the quality of greenhouse farming, and are they engaging government about that? Because if they are looking for quality, then greenhouses produce in better quality. Is there anything more that they are doing to try and convince people to tap into that? The second one is about the founder that they have received towards endorsement from government. Now, I want to know how far is the process? Are they achieving, are they succeeding so that they can solve the funding that they're looking for? And my other question is to Woolworths. Their products are 90% local and 10% import, and they're working hard to replace all the imports with local produce. I want to know about the quality of whether they are not compromising quality, because there are teams that because of high labor in South Africa, our products are more expensive than the imports. So how would this impact on your pricing if you replace what you import with what you need locally? Particularly commenting about the labor factor.
First of all, I'd love to know about Masmat. The presentation of Masmat to me was not clear at all. He was just preaching, but I never heard anything. So, but I have two quick questions for the sake of time. One, you said there is 136 small old farmers which are distributed to across six provinces. Which provinces are you talking about? Because we don't know. And the other question or clarity which you can do is about the packaging. You said the packaging, there's a challenge about the packaging. So what are you doing to train or develop the co-ops maybe to be assisted in this challenge packaging? Let me move to COA. COA, we are very happy because we saw what they are doing, and we are very much impressed because, like, Masmat would lead to God say what they are saying, but in COA we saw everything. Everything is very well organized. But my question to ask about their long term plan, how to cover the whole other provinces, because it's like they are more of KZN only now. What are they doing about the other traditional leaders of other provinces, the chiefs? They said that they've consulted about 50 chiefs and they're happy. Then what's your plan about to hold the program or the project to other provinces? That's the only question to call. But Woolworths, your presentation is very, very, very good. And the presenters, they know what they're doing. And we are very pleased about to reduce about this importing stuff out from Spain. By the way, some national crisis about Israel, about Woolworths, and we never mentioned it. What are you importing from Israel, which caused maybe people to panic when we are sympathizing with Palestine? You were part of the people whom you were on the coastline there. So tell us about this thing of yours with Israel. And the other thing about the food technicians, there was also another crisis, I think, some 4 months ago, that there was a worm found in the food. How safe is your food, Woolworths? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before you respond, I will address some of the issues.
I would not want a Woolworth to respond to the issue of Israel and boycott, precisely because that is not the stance of the country. South Africa has never called for boycott as a government of goods from Israel. It is a political issue. Different political parties have got different views about that. So I would not want Woolworth to respond to that. Let us leave that, because even as political parties have not debated that in Parliament, to say, is this a position of the country? So we are not going to allow Woolworth to respond to that. Also, on the issue of must have said something or not something, I would say that it depends on the receiver of the information. Communication is a two-way process. There is a sender of the information and the receiver of the information. And it then depends on how the receiver of the information interprets the information that was sent, and to arrive at whether the sender of the information and the receiver of the information are at the same level in terms of interpreting the information. So I don't think that we should take it as a standing remark that a mathematics didn't say anything. To me, mathematics said a lot. And I would like I would like us to leave it there, because we are not evaluating the presentations today, who was good and who wasn't good. There is information that was given to us, and we still have to process that information. So, just ignore that. Not. You said a lot, and you took your time, and I learned a lot from your presentation. And one of the things that you said, which was not said by anyone, was how much 77 billion for fresh produce came from you, that information. The 93 billion MatMat, and MatMat is reduced in terms of the market share. That is a lot. The number of SMMEs that you have developed, you shared all that information. The support services that you are giving, and the areas of focus, you shared all that information with us. You even gave us this booklet. So, please, we can't then be correct and say, we haven't said anything, we have said a lot. It depends on whether when you were saying that, all of us were awake. So, communication is like that. You hear what you want to hear, and you don't hear what you don't want to hear. I would say that this meeting for me is a very important meeting. It's a starting point. As Honorable Chancellor said, I would agree with the proposal that Honorable Chancellor put forward of having a team that is going to engage with this. With the retail sector. And I'm saying that because key to the success of small businesses, SMEs and cooperatives, is the better understanding of government, of the retail sector. They need to understand
how much is circulating in the register. Because at the end of the day, each and every citizen in South Africa is our the retail sector. That is what is at the center of the economy, the retail sector. And if the retail sector can open and put a card on the table, each chain, so say, we have so many outlets, like Pick and Pay, sir. We have so many outlets under Pick and Pay, and we have so many outlets under Boxer. If the same can happen in all, and then out of that, further unchecked, how many of those outlets are in the hands of the previously disadvantaged community? In your franchising type of business, how many of those outlets are actually owned by the previously disadvantaged people of this country, or we are still in a situation where others are consumers, trade consumers, and there are those that are retailers? The third issue is, in the retail sector, we also need to know, of all the goods that we find in the shop, what percentage is coming from South Africa, and what percentage is coming from the previous disadvantaged group in South Africa, so that we can then move collectively to say, for the retail sector to play a role of transforming the economy, to have in those shelves goods that are coming from the regulation of South Africa. This is what the government will need to do, either in terms of services, in terms of training, in terms of financial support to those people. All the things that we will need the government to do. Tell us. Because in my view, I don't think that it is correct that there is no threat in South Africa. None one. That is dominated by people with clear means. In South Africa, you would find an area that is dominated by Chinese, you find an area that is dominated by the Pakistanis, you find an area that is dominated by whites in terms of the retail, all those people. But the original people of South Africa, they are carrying that to go there as consumers. That is what you find in South Africa. And if then we are to transform the economy, we need to go deeper to what Honorable Jones has said today. It is okay. You are saying Pick and Pay gave us this figure. But if we actually calculate, it is this percentage, meaning it is a drop in the ocean. And we don't want a drop in the ocean. We cannot transform the economy by having a drop in the ocean. And central to that economic transformation is the retail sector. The retail sector has to be conscious that what happens if I buy something that is produced in India? To give jobs to people that are sitting in India and overlook giving jobs to people that are in South Africa. It can't be far to buy from MC. It can't be far to buy from MC and be closer to buy from China. We all know this. How long it takes you to go to Singa and how long it will take you to go to China. So we need to resolve those issues. And we also need to resolve the issues of poverty in our country and unemployment. So having said that, I would give the presenters an opportunity to present, to respond with a call, because the job is not complete. It was a starting point today to actually get deeper into
the real causes, the real issues that will take us to socio, to radical, social, and economic transformation in this country. Uncle, let me note, it is correct to buy this 10 kg bullion made with the bamboo. I know it's made with bamboo, but it's not made in South Africa. I always buy it from Woolworths because I use it. My mother indoctrinated me to use the white handkerchief. I know it is not produced in South Africa. And there is only a stretch machine that has worked here to actually produce this handkerchief. And I buy these handkerchiefs, packets of these handkerchiefs every month. And I believe a woman sitting in Harding, where I come from, can produce it. It doesn't need to be imported in, from India. So, even in all the presentations, no one talks about the understanding of the retail industry, of where the presidential poverty model comes from. There's 27 of them, where the highest rate of unemployment is. So until we have a common understanding of the issues that we are dealing with, we will not have the correct solution to problems of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. We must have a common understanding of the problems that we are dealing with, and then look at the relevance of the solutions that we all brag about and say, we are providing a solution, we are providing a solution. Does that solution speak to the real problems of this country? That is what we need to understand. So the issue of a task team is an issue that we need to sit down at the portfolio committee level on our own and look at the composition of that and how we then pull the department and, if necessary, other departments that need to play a role here and then engage moving forward with the retail sector. So, and I think that in those engagements, we also need to engage with the DFI, because they are also playing a crucial role here. The issue of non-alignment of the support service that has come from government and the demand by the retail sector has to be resolved, and it can only be resolved if we are at the center of that, and to ensure that the DFI has a common understanding with the retail sector. Who are the people that are the off-takers of the products that we are dealing with? So, I'll give the presenter an opportunity to respond. If you don't have responses today, it's not a train crash. We will discuss those things much deeper when we meet again, because we are going to be meeting on the Tuesday.
Chair, may I take the opportunity just to respond very quickly from Busa. It's my second time that I've been here, and it's clear to me that all of us do something somewhere, but our approach is very, very deep-oriented. We need a unified and well-resourced public-private partnership for entrepreneurship development in this country. And I think your committee can play a crucial role in bringing all of these various stakeholders together to outline your vision and to make sure that we align our vision or our different types of things that we do with your vision. We can turn the state of entrepreneurship in townships around, but as long as we remain so fragmented, we struggle to achieve that goal. So for me, it's important that as soon as possible, we get all of the stakeholders in one room, spell out very clearly where you want to be in the next 2 or 3 years, and we need to somehow align our plans with that type of vision. That is my suggestion. Thank you.
Chairperson, could I respond on behalf of NAFMAX to the questions raised? I'd just like to clarify 1.2% that we spoke about wasn't our contribution to GDP. The fresh produce, butchery and bakery market in South Africa is worth 77 billion rand, and we have 1.2% of that market. In other words, the other 98.8% is owned by other retailers, our competitors. In terms of edible and dry groceries, the size of the market is 99 billion rand, and I said we're around number 5 there. I think our total market share is about 12%. In other words, the other 88% is owned by our competitors. In terms of the 136 farmers, farmers are assisting on KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo province, where we're dealing with both co-ops and farmers that we've organized. In terms of packaging, the point I'm making is that we have packaging engineers, including packaging engineers from Walmart, who are in fact working with our small suppliers, and that's one of the areas where we are providing value. In terms of funds that we set up, the 200 million rand, which is to be dispersed over 5 years ending in 2017, we dispersed 37% of that fund in the first 2 years, or 72 million rand. Over and above that, monies that we haven't included in the fund, but again on our development close to around, and I'm estimating this 26 million rand over the last 2 years. Thank you.
Madam Chair, do you? To answer some of these questions very quickly, because I know time is not on our side anymore. The issue of red tape, I think you heard from our colleague at Woolworths that this is a very frustrating area, and unfortunately it's from the government side, because you have the land tenure matter. Last year we had a very poor group in Isingolweni, near Matatia, where a group of women was offered 5 million rand unsecured loan by Cargill. And all they needed was a lease, and I think we mentioned this to you before. And they lost the 5 million rand because we had to wait 12 months for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform to respond to their lease application. So land tenure, this is a big problem, because it's the government who gets the land tenure for state-owned farms and the land thereof. And it's taking too long. And by the time you're getting the money is gone, the business has lost the opportunity. MEF, in KZN, we have inside information where we know they only accept, their target is to accept 8 projects the whole year from SMEs. 8 projects. And they get thousands of applications. So, again, you find that you're very good to apply. They know what the target is, but they accept all these applications. And there's no preliminary review to see will your application have a chance, but it will be accepted, and you are told to wait until they come back to you. It's sitting on somebody's in tray. Nobody is processing it. And one is waiting and waiting and waiting, where they could be maybe told and given straight answers quickly. So that's also contributing to frustration for the SMEs. And this is called CORE. You know, I think the Reverend Meshwe asked about our funding, how far we are. We have decided as a company that we can't wait for these frustrations anymore. We can't have this radical transformation just be talk and talk and talk and meetings and not delivery. And the private sector, we are saying we will now go outside of this country if it need be, because we have seen a lot of these SMEs, and we are working in Eastern Cape, in Gauteng, in Limpopo, in KZN. Just to answer at the same time the question about is CORE just a KZN company? It's not. We're working nationally, and we have seen the poverty on the ground for ourselves, and it's heartbreaking. And for us to sit back and wait for the red tape to be fixed is going to, we will not attain the 11 million jobs that we are hoping for by 2030, as the NDP says. So we are now looking at a 10-digit loan from an international European funder. We've been having meetings now for a while. We have notified your ministry of this. And on the 10th of February, we submitted requests for documents from you. which we need to we had a meeting with these people on the 20th of February. We requested for these documents from you on the 10th. We are still waiting for them. Okay, and this is small business development. So I think we need to call a spade a spade, and we need to be direct. You're asking us to spell out what are the problems. Who is dropping the ball? We are spelling it out for you. Okay, because business is business, time and time waits for no man. So until now we've had the meeting, we haven't received the documents. We know there was SONA, there was debate. Today there's another presentation in the minister, there'll be more debates. So we would like to ask you to tell us when will we get our documents so we get a 10-digit loan, and we can also that use our own fund to fast track the projects. May I ask us how many projects are we dealing with? I can challenge you to come with me, and I will take you to them so you can audit for yourself. It's many projects. I can't even mention them. We don't have time. But we are now sourcing funding to come and assist these companies ourselves. Because government, even our project, which you say you tell and say you liked it, okay? There's not one rand of government money that was invested in the project. And we are not big retail chain. We are just a small a company that started 3 years ago. And we are a team of people who were the heart for the people who are struggling in this country. And we have taken it upon ourselves because we realized change starts with us as corporate leaders. And we have to say, if we have to wait for government and give excuses about failure, because government and the red tape is restricting development in this country, we're not going to get anywhere. So we decided we're going to be the example to take the bull by the horns, put our neck on the block, get this multi-billion rand loan, and do it out, and do it, and the government will have to catch up with us on the way. So we asked us, what is the role of the PC? This is a conclusive list, but I think it's a good start. Number one, this working committee that Honorable Johnson suggested, I think that has to happen as a matter of urgency. And I think we need to bring in the champions of industry, the mathmats. You are right, sir, when you say they're not the enemy. Because like the Honorable Chair said, these are the people who bring the business. Right now, South Africa is importing over 70 billion rands worth of food every year. In winter, most of the vegetables that come from North Africa, from overseas. Because we are not organized, we still have a lot of meetings to decide how to start growing these things locally. And we're not making progress. So let's have this working committee be put together as a matter of urgency, and let's have other champions who are delivering in the mandate of creating jobs, fighting poverty from the private sector. Because you have the private sector and are the people who can make this thing to happen. So those who you have identified on your oversight visits that are doing a good job, let's get them involved, because one of the members said they're making good ideas. These people have the idea already. They're implementing them. They've done and tested them. Number two, let's focus on big budgets from the department, the GFI, on things that are working. I think you've been and you've seen the Ubu, they were telling us about the Ubu fresh produce market, they're telling us the Isuzu fresh produce market, because it's being used for Isuzu garage and after spending 25 years, you know. When you went to Kamala, they spent over 20 something million over the years, it's failed, and now hearing they want to revive it and put the money as if it's the only project. Why are projects, why is this money not being diverted to projects that are working? You know, and you that make this decision, you are authorizing money to be spent where people know it's failing. I don't know what it is, maybe it's some corruption, some I don't know, but it doesn't make sense. So let's start spending the money where things are happening. This shop accessory that went under, which was a good project, people investing 2 years of time. Where is government? Why is government not supporting these things? You know? So this is a big problem. I think the small business development, you have the mandate, and I think you have the key to make this happen properly now. Let us focus this money to projects that are working. The president mentioned 2 billion rands to allow 1 million hectares to be made productive in 3 years. Unless this business goal changes, this is going to be just another statement. So we need to get this right. Number three, you spoke to us in your presentation, made a show of your transversal agreements in our last two encounters. We want to know, where are they? Because We are working right now in KZN on a project where 1,000 learners have been approved as social development to be trained, skilled, so that they can be self-sustainable and self-employed. We understand that in that project, 200 people have been trained to be electrical technicians, mechanical technicians, and building personnel. Over 40 million rand has been spent by the department training these people. And less than 1% have got a job after that. So what is the point? We're training people to have a certificate. We raise their hopes, taking them from the rural area. They spend some time in a training college, eat nice food, expose to this potential good life, and then back to poverty again. You know? So we can't have this. Let us have the training be integrated with training the skills that are required. We are trying to train people to know how to do this greenhouse farming. We're talking about what is the difference in quality. We are here. First part is here. They will tell you if it was possible, which are the tomatoes they would want to buy. These things have a better, longer shelf life. It makes sense for them. It stays longer and fresher on the shelf, so there's no wastage. We can train people how to do this. We are doing it already. But are we getting the support from the Department of Social Development in the money and the budget? No. You can make this better. You can make this and enforce changes to say companies like COA and others out there who are doing successful projects, who are using their own initiatives. We're not in this to be having tenders and to be just conditioning themselves, but to have true empowerment. Let us divert and workshop together through these working committees to decide on where we allocate this money so we can have the production. So the transverse agreements must come up quickly so we can solve the tenure problems, we can solve the procurement problems. Number four, we spoke of the GFI, the time, thank you. We spoke of the GFI, let us facilitate to unlock and to have transparency as well with the private sector and the other partners to make things happen. I think I'll be at that. We'll meet another day because the other things we'll talk about in the next meeting. But I think we are also frustrated as private sector. We need you to help us to make this work so we can work together. Thank you.
Just one other organic thing, because I just want us to have an idea of an explanation on the difference between us and that.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know what you're saying, the question after present or it's a new question.
Me, because I'm saying there's a talk about food that we are doing through your and their food. That's not from nationally.
Okay.
From towns, and then we are intending to modify this ones that we are doing with the high tech.
Okay. The difference between organic produce and the rest of the produce is that organic, you are not using fertilizers and enhancers, in your production, generally speaking, put it simply. So like organic tomatoes, you're going to use natural compost, you're not going to use fertilizers, you're not going to use insecticides, you're going to use natural ways of preventing and minimizing, the pest effects and so forth. So those methods are not, you can't do high production with that. So that is why when you are doing the normal farming, you're going to use fertilizers, you're going to use chemicals for pest control and disease control. That doesn't mean that it's unhealthy. It's still a healthy option. It's just that you're using artificial accelerants. Okay? But we often say that there's a difference between both those two and GMOs, genetically modified products. We as COA, we don't promote or engage in growing any GMO produce as a company. So those are the two differences. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to try and be quick in answering the question. We would really welcome an opportunity to give input into what is proposed to be a working group. We understand that kind of intelligence, I think, would get us closer to government and maybe getting as closer to the solutions that they also so separately need. Just to link in with that, we sit in our business with
kinologists who understand and was researched and, for example, know that SMA can be a beef, a world beef supplier in the world, not just in South Africa. But to pull that off really requires a hectic partnership. So we're really glad to do that. Obviously, with the proviso that we are a business, so there will be competitive advantage issues that we probably wouldn't want to share, and I'm sure that goes without saying. On the issue, Madam November, I'll skip, hopefully when she comes back I'll be still talking. On the, just clarity on the 90-10 split in terms of imports, so that's only our food business. I just want to clarify it. And we are working on winning that down. For example, the tender stem product that you see there, we used to get the tender stem from Kenya because there the temperatures at night and in the day where I am more or less the same, that the tender stem can grow. That's what our technologists tell us. But what greenhouse and protective farming provide to us is the opportunity to grow tender stem in South Africa. So one of the principles we've made, particularly in produce, is that all our small business initiatives are going to go protected farming. Very expensive. A lot of what we invest in those products is protective, you know, mechanism, whether it's greenhouse or cover. You know, and even those are perhaps I'm looking at really an exorbitant amount of investment. In terms of articulating a role of PC, we're glad to get that invitation, and we will really participate and submit that. Quantity of products. I just want to say, when we embarked on this, transformation journey as we were, one of the things we knew we can never compromise is quality. You know, we can never say small business equals to low quality. That's an unsustainable equation. So our technologists make sure that none of that happens. I mean, there were mistakes we've made in the past where if it's a, we did a project in Pick n Pay where they do jam, and we priced that jam at a lower price for some reason, and it didn't sell. When we spoke to the technologists, that jam is high premium, it competes with import jam. It's really high premium. So we challenge our buying groups to say, why are you pricing it low? Because immediately the customer says, this must be low quality, all jam is even written. In fact, we don't even now put that it's a community project. So the customer immediately thinks, oh, low quality. So we don't compromise on quality. There was an issue, and then labor costs. I think when we made the presentation, we spoke to a business case, it all needs to add up. If it doesn't add up, if the expenses are so high that nobody's making profit, we don't go in. So all our projects is really stacking up to a point where everybody makes profit, including Woolworths, because we really are a business. And I think the one day Woolworths loses market share or is not profitable because we're trying to be government, we're trying really to be socialist, I think that would be a sad day, because then we can't bring more suppliers on board. We are fortunate in that we find ourselves in a growth space. We're growing to Mem November's request about admitting. We're increasing our square meterage for tailing. So we do have the opportunities to bring on board more businesses to suppliers. There was an issue of a worm. We have, if you come into our Woolworths building, which is down the road, we've got products coming through there on probably on an hourly basis. We test our product. So I shouldn't say Woolies food is safe, you know. Yes, the worm was found, but also a frog was found, and the customer was very excited, sent the frog back, and it was a whole big roller. So we get a bit confused. The customer appreciated the frog in the lettuce, and it was alive, and it was sent back. It was a beautiful story. So it's one of those, and to her, it means our food is, you know, healthy because it attracts others. So you're going to find, bound to find those. The handkerchief, Madam Chair, that I'm going to take back. And yes,
when we go and navigate the business opportunities, we grab what we, and we put energies where we find opportunities. So what you really did for us is bringing another opportunity on the table. We are going to challenge our colleagues around the handkerchief. I didn't even know there's a bamboo made handkerchief that would be so thank you. We'll take it back and probably find a way to write back to you to explain exactly what's happening with that. Ma'am,
hold on for the next Alastair. I'm not saying write back to me and explain. I know where it is bought and I know it can be produced in South Africa.
Yes.
All that we need to do is to find a way of making it being produced in South Africa. We work together in making sure. So you don't respond to me, we respond by action.
Thank you. I'll do that. Mom November, Upington. I come from Queenstown. And being, we do find ourselves to be more on the socialist side in business. And one of the things we had to quickly learn is that business of business is business. So we then appreciate why Woolworths can have stores in Queenstown. And I'm not sure which one is bigger, Queenstown and Upington. We can have that conversation. So they can't have a food store in Queenstown. And then you get all this explanation. And then you appreciate issues of viability, you know, profit, waste, that you can generate from having a store where it's not viable. And so on behalf of Woolworths, we can't not yet find the right market to have a store up in Upington. I think Queenstown will come quicker than Upington.
I just want to clarify the whole issue of the greenhouse, all right? Because from the discussion we've had with our fresh produce team, they're very clear, open field farming, because of the whole issue of weather and climate change, the challenge are yields. You don't want to plant and expect to harvest 100 tomatoes and harvest 50. So the best way to make sure that you get as close to 100 as possible is to do undercover and also to do greenhouses. So one of the examples that is a challenge are land vendors of fund greenhouses. The simple is that all our suppliers have been told to move towards high-tech farming, greenhouses undercover. And on this side, we've got Ben Bang who says, I'm not touching a greenhouse. So that on its own says, our suppliers are big enough to invest in greenhouses, let people don't have much money. If the lender can't do it, I can tell now, no one is going to do it. All right, and that is, again, another hindrance in terms of what you're doing. The last one is, we applied for a grant from the British government last year in around about June. We got a letter in January, we got 4.5 million rand grant. And when we got a request to put a jobs fund, we turned it down because we don't know when we're going to get the money. So you can already see, I sympathize with them when they said they'd rather go overseas to raise money. It took us 6 months to get 4.5 million from a British government. But on our own government, you don't even know how long it will take. So those are small, finer things that impede us from actually doing what we want to do in terms of developing black farmers. Thank you.
Madam Chair, could I just confirm something, please? I'm worried that I've created the impression that we only have 24 small suppliers in our group. We have considerably more than that. We've worked with 24 small suppliers in the last 12 months. In other words, that's 24 new suppliers in 12 months. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry that we are pressed with time. These discussions are very interesting. We then demonstrated that we need to come back and implement what was proposed by Honorable Chan, which everybody seems to agree with. Thank you very much, Honorable Chan, for that. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Go well. It was very simple. Thank you.